Board of Preventing County Board of Supervisors to order and stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, followed by a moment of silence.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. I'm going to open up into the County Administrator's report, Mr. Nichols.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the Board, two things to cover. We had a health care that led by Jason Smith, from Parks and Rec, and Gail Garrett, from the Human Resources Office, on the 22nd for staff. It was at the slightly one, Perrysburg Kitchen meeting, but a lot of vendors came, some kind of organizations had booths to really love to see, and then some extra staff from Parks and Rec, and also our Human Resources Engineers, that day, but we really appreciate all the efforts of the different organizations that came on that day, and provide a lot of good information and benefits, insurance information for our staff. And it was quite well attended, and the subway lunch was well received. And the sponsor was?
First Financial Group
of America was the sponsor for the organization for us, and we really appreciate their assistance in making that happen. So good day for that. We've gotten some award winners in the county recently. A variety of folks were recipients of an award for the statewide award and the Northern District Award for interdisciplinary programs in the Virginia Cooperative Extension Office here in Savannah on this program that has been started. But it includes staff from our Cooperative Extension Office as well as citizens from the community here that participated in county departments. And then Kim Mayo and Faye Anderson from our Cooperative Extension Office also won the Northern District Award for the program that they started on healthy lifestyle choices. And then Faye Anderson also was recognized at a very prestigious award program for outstanding performance in food and nutritional education, received an award in front of peers from a number of states. And so we're pleased with that. And about 2 minutes ago, Pat was calling, we heard just an hour ago, thanks to a reporter in our area, we have received the Manhole Horse Grant for the amphitheater. It's $10,000. And so it's a great way to start, so we really should have to do the paperwork between that and all the folks that participated in that. That'll at least get us started. It doesn't seem there should be restrictions to that, so we can do site selection and get infrastructure in and things like that until we get some more money to put against it. But we really appreciate the fact that got submitted and we got a word that it was just announced on Newsplex with the whole list of winners. Is it the Dave Matthews Band foundation that they were $376,000 for grants to a whole long list of organizations. The second Giant Crush was public meeting to take public input on that work group is today. It's between these two meetings. It'll be out in the lobby here in the circuit courtroom. The one that was last week or
Wednesday
last week was reasonably well attended. It was at the Design Crossroad Better Living office, and again, just to collect input from the public. And then I think all of you have seen the draft of the carry-on plan and potential dates and what the next series of meetings and things will be. So that project is ongoing. But we didn't do very good on that communication link, so we'll fix that. But citizens all heard what I posted all over, but the message didn't get to all of you to comment or work with the planning commission. But we really intended to have displays taken into it from the public to hear what they had to say and provide to the work group. This is Fire EMS Memorial Week. It's actually the first annual one for the state of Virginia to honor those who died in line of duty in our fire EMS services. The carnival, the Fluminense Fridays Carnival, sometimes around the 4th of July, is actually this weekend this year. It's changed the timing, and probably better, and maybe we'll get a little better visibility than 4th of July, where a lot of people are gone, plus it was really hot last year. So it's this weekend, starting today through Saturday.
Is it actually Saturday? I noticed that he had some of the things up that didn't look like it had
spread out.
Well, they only have six rods this year.
That is.
Okay. And so our inspectors have already gone and inspected the rods and inspected the sites, and so they're ready to go. But it's really just in that one compact area.
Okay.
But if we were in town this weekend, my friend and I would probably still do it with the seal of approval. But we're in that town Thursday. So. But anyway, coming up this weekend, lots of rides and events and things going on, and music events. This is really just an information proposal to you that the Sheriff's Office, the County Attorney's Office, my office, and John Thompson's office, the Cooperative Extension Office, have been working on the potential storage of their firearms in the Cooperative Extension Office. The various hurdles that the Sheriff and the County Attorney wanted to make sure we covered on there are in line. They have some competition weapons that they use for 4-H club events. And so the type of safe that will be installed in there, the sign-in, sign-out access, all those types of things are on the checklist that have been the sheriff's job, the county attorney's job, and our review. And so I think we're ready to go on. If they just have to identify the place by the right kind of safe, it's not just a plain old key safe, but the special kind of key lock safe, and then they have their sign-in, sign-out procedures. So those, instead of trying to find some off-top stories, they'll have them here for the programs to be able to the folks that they're authorized to check those out and take them to those events for 4-H 4-H sporting events. Any questions on that? I mean, we cleared all the right people to talk to all the events. The emergency services coordinator, as you know, has been hired. Cheryl Elliott Wilkins is on board. I'm just in the Harrisonburg area. Cheryl can stand up with a massive crowd today to see me. is on board, and it really is settling very quickly. There's been a meeting with the local fire and rescue and police agencies, and spreading that out to agencies that we support or work with around the area, and really great to have her as an addition on board, and will be a really good supporter for recruitment, training, and retention of our volunteer staff in our county, too, and then managing emergency situations and disasters or things that go along with the recovery efforts. So we're pleased to have Ms. Wilkins on board. Mr. Will Shaw has been hired as the new public works assistant and starts a week from Monday out in public works. He's replacing Mr. Bill Ford, who retired at the end of May. And we're doing some musical chairs in my office building down the bottom floor of finances. One of the things that I've been concerned about since I've been here is that there's two different kind of server rooms for county servers and infrastructure. One is in the back of my office, but it's an exterior office with windows, and the other one is on the ground floor, an exterior office with windows. Both of them also have window air conditioners in them. What we're going to do is move some offices on upstairs where Mr. Black is now, the erosion sediment control coordinator. That office is an interior office with no exterior windows and no likelihood of break-ins or half the weather hazards. Same way. Instead of having two IT rooms, we'll consolidate down into one IT room. It gives much safer space for the IT staff to work in. If you ever try to get, if someone, God forbid, got shocked or electrocuted in one of the IT rooms, trying to get literate now, the one that's in finance now, you have to go through two offices into another office and then around the corner into the back corner, plus it's a limited room, is really problematic. But this other one will have direct hallway access. We'll just change the door out of that, make sure the wiring is set. And Mr. McMahon and Mr. Notman believe they can do that work themselves because both rooms are so closely located to the new room. The bar will need to run too many extra cables, and then we just realign the stuff and drop it into that room. And then they can spread their IT infrastructure out, and that allows us then to make some changes in that area to make a much safer environment for IT long term. So that'll be over the next. Probably over the next 60 days or maybe 90 days, depending on which moves we do in what sequence, and then they make sure the room is ready, and then over the weekend they'll be doing some moves on wiring. He's moving into an office inside the finance right there, so he'll still have a file room there, and he'll still be adjacent to his staff. We had talked about putting him in public works because there's an extra workspace in there and lots of big areas. But it pulls away a little bit from the interest support that he gets out of Ms. Halpern down in the building inspections office. So we're going to just try this first. If we're going to work on long-term, we'll look at the alternatives. in your package this week, this is the first one you get. I told you about this before, but I'll report the link. You'll see this monthly. That's the Board of Supervisors and Directors and Request Status Report. So you can see that. What I normally do is you'll see anything that's pending, and then maybe the last few that were the most recently been completed. And as they get completed, you'll see them on the board and they'll drop off. But this is available for you in there, so that if you have any questions in the meeting about following up on any specific one, if you haven't heard of any updates on it, please remind me, and then we can go through it. There's a list of items that are ongoing and coming up this meeting or future meetings.
What about Cunningham Mass?
I talked to Joel DiNunzio of VDOT a couple times about our difficulties. We're still trying to figure out who formally owns the property now. So I tried to call Mr. Green twice.
Yes, that's what I'm concerned about.
Yeah, I tried to call him twice. No one answered in the residence, nor did he have the answering machine. So I'm still following up on that. I've just been tracking on the call. But I'll certainly get a hold of him. I know the last time I talked to him, he said it was January. I actually talked to him on February 22nd. I could have talked to Peter. You know, I've just been tracking what I'm doing. I just couldn't get a hold of him. Last week, so I just couldn't get a hold of him. He didn't have no answer on his phone and no message. And then another call for you, the folks that were out in Hidden Valley, off of Long Acre Road. They asked a long time ago about alternative fire station when the Tenasca power plant was built, things like that. I'm not going to get hold of them, but they actually visited their house a few weeks ago. No one was home at the time. Finally got another address for them and another phone, but still no answer and no message machine. But I'll continue to track right now. So
thank you.
It's kind of a long ways out, and there were a number that was on the letter that provided wasn't the right address. It's actually a different numbering system. But anyway, I'll continue to follow that one too.
Other question marks from you?
You're
sitting there on that page, and the next page is...
Oh, here. That one, it was in an action report. It was in an action items report for the board. But I don't recall it, and I don't recall anyone saying anything about it, and so I'm trying to figure out whether anything's ever been done. But it was research options of taking the bond out for CIP. Now, Mrs. Horlocker has looked at a lot of the financing options for CIP items or water sewer infrastructure, things like that. So that's already ongoing. But I didn't really know how to answer that, so I'm glad you reminded me, because I wanted to ask all of you if there's anything special about that item.
I think it doesn't relate to the word.
Okay, well, we've sort of worked on that. So.
Yeah, some others on the next page.
Okay. Initiate an action item to authorize funds for the water treatment plant to carry the facility. I don't know. It's one that was pre-me, and I don't recall what it's for. It's just I don't remember everything getting done since I've been on board. Now, there's a wastewater facility that's behind the carriage of elementary school that belongs to the school. We're talking about that facility. But if we're talking about something at Thomasville plant,
are we not talking about maybe testing that's going to cost?
Well, I'll brief you that on that today.
Right.
And maybe it's related to that. I don't know.
That's what I thought. That's what happened.
Could be there was no wastewater treatment plant there. I think it's the one behind the Carriageburg Elementary School that this is relating to. But because it's 15 or 18 months removed now, I just don't recall. And as a matter of fact, Mr. Stevens and I just had a meeting this morning talking about the wastewater treatment plant at Carriageburg facility at the Central Elementary School. And that would
The school's actually just finished some form of upgrade at that plant that's at Carriesbrook Elementary, formerly the middle school. This may be related to that because I think that project started sometime last year. I said the school's just finished an upgrade of the wastewater plant that's at the Carriesbrook School. I would assume the county would have needed to fund that in one of their budgets or the other, so it may have something to do with that. Yeah, I know they were doing work at both schools, but I think they did a fair amount at the Carriesbrook one.
We gave some money for that.
Yeah, quite a bit.
That So that, this one and the previous one we looked at, I'll plan on disposing things out. I think they've been taken care of in some way, but it was just ones I just didn't have enough information on, didn't know. And then the next one, I think that's already kind of gone by the wayside. The LEVC includes all these organizations. Fire Rescue Association, if that's something, unless there's something new.
I decided to combine that, leave it the great way, but without another group, have created another group, decided not to do that.
Okay, well, I don't know of any current thing called the Public Safety Committee or the Fire and Rescue Committee. There was a roads committee that we created last fall, but these two were not on any list that I had, and when I went through all of those last fall to look at all the boards and committees and then early this spring, they weren't on any of those lists, so it was, again, pre-me, I don't really...
Right. Fire and Rescue Committee is something Mr. Fairchild and myself had served on, that meeting. And it met about two or three times and never recalled it.
It was a group that meant for emergency purposes, is that they would coordinate emergency activity in the LOA and various...
Well, that's the LEVC. That's certainly constituted. The chair of that is Mrs. Logan. And the local emergency planning committee is very... The sheriff actually started putting that together. We have one of the most robust ones in the state. And people have looked at this one for a while. It has all those players in it. And the Lake Monticello and all the local agencies, and that's an ongoing one meets quarterly, and so that one I think kind of supersedes most of
them.
I think so. That was a really robust one, and they're the ones that coordinate the emergency operations plan and the so if you all concur, all of those three I'll close out. I'm not sure exactly what the action was, but they're the ones that I just couldn't identify in minutes.
I believe Mr. Chesser and I, back February of 2012, we were at the meeting at the
courthouse,
and it was decided to disband that group, and if we wanted to be non-active participants in their group, I think that's where we're at. So that you...
There just wasn't any good definition of the minutes part of it. I mean, it was involved with the action on it. But anyway, so the rest of them will be there. And you'll see this report on a monthly basis, and we'll track items. And if you've got item B1, or if it's a formal action or request that's in the action item minutes, it'll go on here, and then we'll track it. So I can kind of keep that there for you. And as I told you before, I'll be on vacation for about a week. I mean, we're actually leaving tomorrow evening. Bobby Hopkins will cover it. Actually, I'll be on phone by available by phone and email, but a quadrennial sojourn back to the homeland of Wisconsin and had a great piece of graduation and taking my daughter to the back of the football and the field. That's up to debate. And then a variety of things that are ongoing. I'll give you an update on the voluntary contribution plan today. And then these processes will work with various agencies to try to get some things more electronically done rather than just paper checks or cash and some high-fee credit card services. Here's self service is coming, water infrastructure. I'll give you updates on all the water infrastructure items today. And now that this is Wilkins on board, we can start working on a potential plan to present to you and to the Fire and Rescue Association, talking about the revenue recovery options. And then Mr. Stevens will be doing these the building utilities, the infrastructure, the facilities things on the menu at the June 19th meeting. So we should be able to wrap up a number of things on here at that time. And close to this out. Any questions that I can answer for you?
Questions from the county administrator?
We got a note from, we've got a note twice about firearms in rural area. The person was concerned about safety.
Yeah, and they were shooting at targets, and it was right next door, right in his fence. And where are we on that one? Yeah.
So what the latest one came in,
a branch
you saw the one from the gentleman who went and sent to the suit to the board through the website. That day when it came in, I forwarded that to Sheriff Washington. Sheriff Washington asked Colonel Hess to work on that. I talked to Mr. Williams on the phone about the issue.
It
explained what went on, and that the sheriff's office will be working. and ask questions about it. There's a little bit more information from that one that happened either the next day or later that afternoon from when he sent that email that the sheriff's office is actually investigating. Now, what I expect may happen is that the sheriff's office may come forward. He will be giving you an update on that, but I expect that they may be looking at some potential alternatives since this is a kind of an ongoing concern about the county. And because the houses are closer and closer, I'm pretty sure I don't want somebody shooting a 306 25 yards from my house. But from my 308, but we're also a rural county, and there are no ordinances to cover it in the same way as other counties do. Sheriff is actually looking at that now, and I've requested that he come forward to any proposals he may have, and then based on citizen review, I can decide which way he wants to go.
I recall correctly, the last time this issue came up was with Columbia District, and there's a gentleman that actually had a max stop and was shooting something quite a bit, and little old ladies came up and said, would you mind toning it down? And he said, yeah, sure. And little old ladies went back in, and he ended up bringing out his 50 cal and started, boom, 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 boom. I mean, and called the deputy over and asked him to do something, and check it out. And by the ordinances, the most he could do is say, is it being operated safely? Yes. Beyond that, it's...
A little dirt berm is not going to be much help for a 50 caliber of anything.
Yeah, a little bit more than a dirt berm. But still,
the trees in there.
It's that point. But the long and short of it is that not a whole lot of students.
No, not unless our rates
are checked. Right. In a rural district, of course, all during hunting season is all the years. You live in the country, there's not a lot you can do about that. So where do you strike that responsible balance between, rural locality and approaching suburbia? I'm not so sure I have a clean answer.
Throw a line in the sand.
I think it's
or sound wall or something.
It's just on the bottom, because there's a big river there.
Unless you're from Buckingham.
They only have about 10,000 residents in that whole huge county. And then the other thing is that in that email that you all received, the gentleman who sent the email said that a police officer came out and actually talked to him and said he couldn't do anything. That was not a sheriff's office person, that was a state police.
Wasn't
ours, it was a state police. Increase some of the departmental other departments' responsibilities when it comes to grants. Many of the new directors in our board are used to being in localities where when you have a grant for your department, there are certain things you have to do with that. Mrs. Drew's been very good about doing most of the work, but maybe we can devolve a little bit of that stuff while we still have some central management and some financial oversight and things like that on. So the departments may pick up a little extra responsibility, but really absorb most of her duties into two existing positions. We reclassify a budget balance position, currently a K-band 14 into a management balance position, and then add some additional duties to pick up some of this group's things into the purchasing officer position. And we've already got the documentation done for that to identify it. And then we would not backfill the grants position. Now, the reason we would not do that is because this would be a way to test it, see if we can accommodate it. I really wanted to find that position in finance anyway. That would be, as it stands now, even with the reclassification and the pay raise for that purchasing officer position, it would still be a $56,000 a year savings. Now, there have been a number of people talking about other alternatives and other positions needed or other things needed or other functions needed to be paid for. Well, that's potentially some non-general fund money that could be used for something like that.
For trying to figure fund balance.
Non-fund balance money. I mean, without going to the bank, it's money that's already appropriate.
That's right.
And could be used. Now, the caveat to that, there's the grants administrator position. This is what we do. We do that grants administrator position never made it. We would add a duties to the purchasing officer and change the budget analyst to the management analyst so that largely those grants function we picked up within the Department of Finance. Now, the caveat again with that is really isn't going to work as perfect as we have now. Well, a lot of things won't work as perfect as we have now because this group's hard to replace. She's got lots of experience, lots of knowledge, lots of contacts. But we're going to have to evolve in some way. So I would like to just put this in place, try it for 6 months, look at it and see. And then potentially, at that time, if you find out that it's working well, then just make a recommendation on eliminating that position or identify another use for that. But in any case, I think this is a doable option. The finance director agrees, the HR manager agrees, and the staff in finance are willing to take on those duties and think it's a reasonable option, too. It gives us an alternative to just a straight one-for-one replacement.
That's certainly a good option, Dave. I fully agree with you.
I agree with that option too. I just want to make sure that when you rely on that, that the grants administrator, we need to focus that individual will be looking for types of things that be a benefit to us and not be off, well, we'll do it maybe this time or maybe not this time or something that, it's part of the job that people want to be doing.
Right. I find it highly unlikely unless we go out and recruit a brand new person, where we're going to get, well, we're not going to get time to recruit. This is Bruce, very skilled, very capable, very knowledgeable, and knows what's out there. But, to our benefit, she's going to be with Town Assessment Planning District Commission, and we feed off that, and we support that organization. She will be a community, a Central Virginia resource. And while it will take some time for our folks to rank up, there needs to be some training, and they certainly will be the bellwether. The finance group director will be. I doubt it would be as good or as robust as this group will be right off the bat. Well, I know it won't be. Not possible. But we will still have her phone calls away and ask questions. We get lots of grant information. Even I get tons of grant information all the time now that I can help evolve to that department. But I assure you that we will try our best to replace this group.
I like the idea of looking at it for 6 months. Let's see how it works. The savings of $55,000 is enticing. Maybe needed elsewhere.
You got a question for this?
I've got one for you. So this was the original one to reclassify the grants position to move it into finance, and all we're going to do is change it from grants administrator to management /. This is the alternative, and it would be reclassifying our current budget analyst position, that would be Mr. Dahl, and adding duties to our purchasing officer, Mr. Rodish, and again, the dollar savings in both
essentially just be set aside until we decide either to drop that position or we decide to use it for some other purpose. But as long as it's all the appropriate money. And so the funds for this would be a very tiny part of the overall cost. That's why $56,000 is actually saved. So there's your motion if you're inclined to go this way.
Mr. Chair, I move to approve the reclassification of the current position title for the analyst classification number 1380, A-band 14, position title of management analyst classification number 1385, A-band 70, effective July 1st, 2013.
Sir, second. Motion made by Mr. Chester, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0.
Okay, so now just one reminder on that, because it's in the presentation, I didn't put it as part of the motion, but that includes the pay bump because of the additional duties of Mr. Roach. It will be recorded in minutes, it's just not part of that motion. But as long as you approve that, that's the end of the stand.
Okay, moving on to tab O.
BZA. And there are three members. BZA is for union. You have to be careful. There's only certain people that can serve on the BZA. You can't be essentially on anything else except the planning commission to also serve on the BZA. So you have three candidates. You have two candidates. Both Mr. Babbitt and Mrs. Eager. Both of them currently serve on the planning commission. Mrs. Eager also serves on the Ag Enforcement Committee. She would have to resign from that position to move to the BZA. It's just one of those that has some legal stipulations. The only thing you can be on is the planning commission. So the two candidates are Mr. Babbitt and Mrs. Deer, Dr. Babbitt and Mrs. Deer, and I think they're both well-known to you.
Regarding tab O, Mrs. Green, I understand that at some point in time we were interested in actually appointing somebody from the town of Columbia to the Board of Zoning Appeals. Do you know?
The town has that interest in light of the...
Wait, without objection from the board, then, would you mind deferring tab O until the next meeting? So we go ahead and explore whether or not there's any interest. Because, again, the way that the memorandum of understanding with the town is described, they can share our board zoning appeals, but they need representation on that board. And so this is an opportunity to extend that representation.
What is on this board?
Five.
Okay, well, without objection, then if we could just go ahead and extend that for 2 weeks and see what the availability is. And if we can find an individual, great, and if we do not, then we'll proceed.
Mr. Chairman, just to clarify things, there wouldn't be any problem with making what you're suggesting. Law doesn't require that Columbia have a seat on the BZA. It's certainly permitted because the town of Columbia is also in Bluebend County. Mm-hmm. But I think you should recognize that doesn't make this a Columbia seat. So a person, for example, wouldn't be able to act on things outside of Columbia. He could. He'd be just like any other citizen.
Okay.
I want to make that clear because there were some other options to throw him around.
And that was my quizzical look on that because I didn't
know
that
they got
driven that way. Planning commission potentially down the line. But on the BZA has met since March of 2010 anyway.
Right. The Panthers pretty well diversified with seven.
They're all out of our position. Yeah. There's five of them now.
Yeah.
But it's pretty spread out.
You said one more up. Yes, I do.
Okay. We can bring back up the 19th. In the meantime, this is Ruben Halkett, call me to see if there's any candidates that would like to marry you and help her just give this information to the board to send out.
And then on tab P, without objection out there, I believe there's some sentiment from certain board members that would like to be able to defer on this as well.
What is the reason for deferring on that?
I'd like to voice that concern. Parks and Recreation, we have a new director, Mr. Jason Smith, and we're looking at other ways for our advisory council to function. We talked about three committees where we can begin to have our people work. They have our bylaws, you could be on there as long as you like to, as long as you keep getting appointed. And I have not, this is my fault, I haven't talked to Jason. I need to speak to Jason. If I'm not going to recommend a person to be on this Recreation Advisory Board, I want to tell them that I'm going to recommend that they not be on there. I don't want them to hear it in the community. somewhere and say, almost all of whoever you told me on the board. We need to talk about the makeup of our advisory board. And even if the advisor, I'd like to see the advisory board sit down and talk about what they're doing, what they're bringing to the board. Because we can't continue to have people sit on boards and then have moved. And I'm not saying, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying the advisory board is doing nothing. But I don't think we can say that we have a permanent seat. And we stay there, and we stay there. So I would really, and since we have a new direction, and trying to do some different things, I'd like to be upfront with that. I don't know when we meet every other month. If we don't meet in July, yes, I don't know if that's too long to hold off. But we,
well, I just wonder what's wrong with it.
Is
it
better than we do, Mary?
Yes.
Yeah. Take what we have now.
Have we ever done any sessions before?
Have we done any sessions? Existing members for, say, 90 days?
On your rack board.
Standing from?
Yes.
I'm sitting behind. So maybe we can do that, I guess, just through the summer talk a little bit. There's one change on campus, too. Mr. Scott
right.
Is also in the EDA, despite he's been no longer.
Yeah. And I'd like to answer Mr. Weaver. He said, what's wrong with the people that we have on
it? Uh-huh.
There's nothing wrong with the people that we have on it. But we really do need to look at what we're trying to do and which direction we're going.
I guess I'm not sure. What direction are we trying to go in right now? I mean,
in parks and recreation.
Yeah, I know, but.
Yeah, yeah. That could be changed with the group that you have on there. You just, that's the direction. That's
yeah, we've already set some different directions. So what we're doing now is we have committees that these board members are on a certain committee's working committees, and they take care of certain things. We haven't really got it rolling and going yet. And so I just like to hold off with this city just a little while. I don't think it's
going to be
that
detrimental
to anybody. Well, I don't know if all the time it's working. Well, we haven't even tried our new directions yet. We haven't met. The committees haven't met yet. We haven't had to. Jason has had a lot to do to get off the ground and get things going. And
well, that's been years.
So that's my... Now, y'all, you can do anything you want to do, but that's just my feeling. I've sat on them for 5 years, and I see that we are moving, and we need to make sure, you know, we have some people been on there for ever. Ever.
We can't keep deferring everything.
We're going to defer to the next board meeting.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah,
I'm going to
defer
to
that.
Yes, that's fine.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, ma'am. So tab O, tab B, we'll go ahead and defer to the next board meeting. Tab Q, appointment to the Library Board of Trustees at large position.
Okay, you have four candidates. One of whom is the current member, Ms. Angela Bergeron, and then Mr. Ellis, Mr. Gall, and Ms. Gooch are the other three candidates for that vacant position that's coming up.
Do you have a nomination that you think?
I have one motion.
Motion.
I move to appoint, reappoint. To Angela Bergeron, the Library Board Trustees with a term to begin July 1, 2013, and terminate June 30, 2007.
Second. Motion made by Mr. Ellenberg, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0. That goes through our action matters. Moving on to presentations, the volunteer contributions plan update.
Okay, all of them.
Mr. Edges.
Here's the last day of the tax collection. So I'll give you the update as I know. So I talked to Prince Edward County staff, I talked to Alabama County staff. There's other examples around, but both those counties have done something like Mr. Allmark had proposed before. So in the late 90s, the treasurer at that time, who was subsequent enough, Prince Edward, but the treasurer at that time, decided to place a donation to Prince Edward Schools on the tax bill. This is an example. This is a tax bill from Prince Edward County. And what they did is this overtype down here, donation to Prince Edward Schools, and people could fill in the number. That's a little bit problematic, but that's what they did. And there is tracking the people. And during that time, from 1996 to 2007, they collected $339.
pretty sure that there was probably $3,039 worth of staff time to collect that $339. But originally, that was placed on because citizens in the community had asked about donating to schools, and so they put it on there. It went away because they weren't getting money and they stopped doing it. The treasurer actually put it back on in the year 2012 and they collected $1,100 through that method. So that's the Prince Edward experience. In Elmore County, it's a little different. Elmore County used the voluntary contributions plan and they only did it in the fall of 2010. So they posted a flyer with the tax bills, which actually has some beauty to it, makes it a little easier for us. I'll show you an example. They provide info on that sheet about how to make voluntary contributions and who you can make them to. And during that year, they collected $2,500 on this. Since then, they've gotten some occasional contributions, but they haven't used the same system, the same flyer in the time since then. This is their flyer, kind of just a general information form about Elmore County contributions. And then down at the bottom of the form, you can tear off this sheet and check the lock you want, put your money on it, and set it in. And they require just a separate payment on that because it's easier from an accounting perspective, especially if you've got a check. In this day and age of electronics, you should be able to do just one payment. But that, as we move forward, we'll be able to figure that out. Right now, that might be a simpler way to move forward, is to do whenever you make a voluntary contribution, do it on a separate check. Now, in our case, what we really need to do, and there's not a whole lot left here that we have to fiddle with, other than some of the really hard stuff, the structural decisions on what you're going to do and what you're going to collect it for and how you're going to collect it and what you want to do, acquire, not acquire, etc. So we've got to sign an authorized use. Things like, we have to have some clear policies that you can't use this to send in to get it for staff bonuses. I'm not suggesting you can't, I'm just saying that if you don't want to use for those kinds of things, then you're going to have to make sure that we identify the kinds of things that can be used for or can be. Probably not for new hires because it's not a sustainable dollar source. New programs, even that's problematic because, again, if it's a sustainable program, you can't sustain it on the donations because you're not necessarily going to have it. We'll have to have some idea of what we want to reject. If somebody sends in money for like a community swimming pool, but we're not planning on building a community swimming pool, then it'd be kind of, you wouldn't be using the money for the intended purpose that the taxpayer asked for. We'll need a list of specific departments and agencies or functions. I've got a sample to show you. The treasurer's office certainly would prefer a separate check if it's paid by check. A separate check for that makes it easier for their accounting purposes, at least on your current systems. I still haven't figured out the effect on renters yet. I know we talked about it before, but I just haven't told the treasurer that very hard. On the front side, I'd recommend two things. I'd recommend you do this as an insert to bills. We already have to get the bills stuck into envelopes rather than trying to add on to that already pre-printed bill that has front and back information. There's no extra space left on there. I would just do another insert because when they're folded by machine and stuck in envelopes, just add the insert with it, and that way the information would be on it. I'll show you an example. And frankly, if you want to do this plan, I think get a button on the website. There's no reason why it can't be exactly the same way on the website, the exact same information on the page, and maybe it's only by credit card there. And we use our existing credit card service and it's a little service fee. But eventually, sooner hopefully rather than later, we will be accepting credit cards and debit cards in our account for things and we can get those online without any big fees for it. In addition, as we talked with the contrarian before, the contributions will generally be tax deductible. There may be some circumstance under your specific own personal tax situation. Maybe there'd be some difference, but that's an individual's problem with their CPA or their accountant. If it's that nebulous, they need to really talk to somebody about their finances. And we're not the tax police for that. So that's probably a citizen's issue. But they may need a receipt, so we'll have some method in place to be able to provide a receipt if they do a donation because they need tax purposes. I don't know that we'll need county negotiations, but it's possible, so we'll need to develop that. Time for implementation is still planned for December, but I really don't see the reason why we can't at least have it on the website before that. If we get these other rules in place and identify it, it should be pretty easy to add the button there, have the rules, and then just to see how it works and see what the questions go up. Before you print the insert, put it in December, the bills for December, probably late October. And then voluntary contributions would normally be used to support the service, given. So if I said I wanted to donate to Parks and Rec, well, then it would go to Parks and Rec. But we'd have to have some ideas of what should be used for, like, again, hang raises or bonuses or things that are not sustainable for this perspective. But, you know, whether it's grounds maintenance or buying extra things or whatever. And then here's a draft form. This is really mimics. We've changed it for ours, but I just try to mimic something simple that, like, that other counties have done. It explains very clearly what it's for, you know, why you can do it this way, what you can do it for, and then you can go to local government if you want to mail treasurer's office, or if you want to go to public schools, you can mail the treasurer's there. You return this bottom portion, you just check off the, you know, county government general fund, Parks and Rec, sheriffs, social services, county library. It's a little hard to put down, like, you know, the Department of Finance or the planning department. It's not that you couldn't, but I don't think we need to have 50 alternatives because they're a little nebulous. Most people think of those big three or four or five things.
You say mail it to the schools, the contribution?
Can, yes. Now, the schools has on their website, they've got, if you dig down through a couple links, there's a contribution form, and it's pretty nebulous, and it's a little odd as what the explanations are. So I have not talked to the schools though to get the information. But that's what's happened in other localities. The
schools already accept voluntary
contributions. They do accept voluntary contributions, but their form is a little odd and there's some unusual language that doesn't mimic what I thought would be normal. And so I just haven't had a chance to talk to them about it yet. But it's an interesting form that has, it almost sounds so restrictive that you can't give it, but you can. So I'm just not sure exactly how to resolve it yet. But anyway, this would be a sample. You can put the rescue squads and the volunteer fire departments out there, you know, public school general funds or a specific program, and get a little leery about putting a blank where you can fill in the blank on there, because if you put down, well, destination imagination, not that you couldn't do it for that, but I mean, if you put down a nebulous thing or you stall it wrong or you don't know what's going on, or you've got a thing that you want that the school doesn't do, then you have to worry about all the things of getting the money back to the person, calling them, contacting them. Because it's likely that the money collected based on the experience from other accounts is not going to be moving, there's a lot of staff time in managing these payments and processing these things. So I want to make it as error-free and as simple as possible without having to go back to the well and having to go back to citizens to say, hey, we can't accept this and we've got to mail this back and what do you really want this for? So I'd like to make this as crystal clear as possible, but that's certainly up to you all. Now, I'll send this electronic form up to you just so you can look at it from a draft point of view. But the rest of the stuff that I've just shown you is what I'm working on with staff, trying to figure out all those final last details. But my goal would be to get it on the website this summer, and then by fall to have a form ready to be able to stuff in mailers so we can go. If that's the little report.
If it's acceptable to the board and the chair, I'd like to follow up with staff, dot the I's, cross the T's, and then bring it to the board and complete form.
Sure. I've gotten a lot of good feedback on this.
That's a lot, actually.
They really are pleased about this.
And that's across the spectrum, too.
Yes.
And I know it started out as an FOFF idea, but it's one of those things that, you know, just makes sense. So,
I think by doing that, we'll have less questions. I'll get with staff once tax season is over, and we'll get this finalized.
Less help would be better, but we'll take any help that you want to
get. Mr. Chairman, can I make a couple of comments?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
And this is really just to highlight a couple of things that Mr. Nichols has here, because this is a very good presentation. I hate for the press to quote me saying that Alma has done something right. But I just want to see. I think using the Alma form as a model is a good one. Let me make a couple of comments that I think are important as we go forward with this. I talked to Mrs. McLinnor too, so she expressed concerns to me that are basically reflected on this. The first thing that concerns me is that it's very important that this that these be clearly distinguished from tax payments. And tax payment, some people are going to think they're required to make this contribution. And that's not fair. The other thing is, and Ms. Linder brought this up, is that if you put it on the tax form, what a lot of people will do is they'll say, oh, I've got, you know, $63 in personal property tax, and I want to make $25 to the schools, so I'll just write one check for $88. And you can't do that. And that's particularly important with taxes, because if Ms. Linder gets a payment for taxes, and it's part of it is earmarked for a contribution, and the person owes back taxes, for example, she's required to pay the back taxes before she pays anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an accounting problem for her. It's also an accounting problem for the citizen, because then is he entitled to take the contribution, the deduction of the contribution? And she's probably not, because he hasn't made a contribution, he's just paid his taxes. I think it's important to distinguish this, and the kind of form that Mr. Nichols is talking about is very good for that, because then there's no ambiguity whatsoever. The second thing about that is, I would suggest that the categories be pretty broad. And so, contributions to the schools, for example, or maybe contributions to the school's athletic programs. The problem you're going to get is if somebody comes in and says, I'm going to give $500 to buy mouth guards for the girls across. Then you start getting into how much trouble it is to account for this, rather than saying, give it to the athletic departments. Hopefully, if you want to say you prefer that it go through the cross, that's fine, but that way it's not tied up in that. I would suggest a deep, sort of broad brush things, like county general government, fire rescue, law enforcement, emergency services, things like that, schools. The other thing I noticed on this form, we may have a problem with a couple of those categories, because the fire companies and the rescue squads are independent entities. They're probably tax deductible. They should be tax deductible themselves. I think we could claim contributions for them and just funnel it through them, but I think that gives us another problem, because then we've got two sets of accounting we've got to do. My suggestion is that if we're going to talk about emergency services, that it be a more broad brush division, like emergency services, and then we could forward it through the sheriff or through Ms. Logan's office or whatever it is. Finally, there is a requirement for receipts, and I think that's easily doable. It would cost a little bit, and I hope we make more than $339, because it would take long to get that on staff time. But
already did that good
one,
baby.
I'm going to mess with it. But we do need to do that. So I think this is a good program. It's a good idea. But those are some of my thoughts about how we apply it. And the key to it is making sure that you all give the direction what you want to do. I think this contribution, this presentation is very good. Gives you the template for making these decisions.
One way to get around the issue of the actual cost of process is a minimum contribution. It's one thing if you somebody donates a dollar, well, it costs $3 to process.
That's another idea.
Set a minimum contribution of $5, for instance. That not only allows for the processing, say if it's a PMT or a credit or whatever these may be, but it also allows for 15, 20 seconds of staff time to actually make that process.
Okay.
That's a good one.
15, 20 seconds.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Thank you for joining us.
I happen to do this for a living. It takes longer than that, so I need some time on my work.
Thank you very much.
Satisfied, Mr. Ogba. Outstanding. We'll look forward to your presentation back to the board. Moving on to the local youth football team, 7th grade level, Mr. Smith.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I'm here to provide you guys an update based off of Mr. Custer's request at our last meeting regarding the U-12 football team. And current overview, essentially, U-12 is 11 and 12-year-olds. The U is under 12 for some of the folks who might not understand what U-12 actually means. Right now, the current opportunities for this specific age group, they've got an opportunity within the county through Pop Warner. Otherwise, they would have to travel outside to Albemarle, Louisa, Orange. And if the holdup with Pop Warner is they have to meet a certain weight limit. If they're over 100, then their only option is to travel, essentially. And that becomes the main issue. If they do travel, they're going to have to play up with 13-year-olds. And through the AAU League, that some research has been done on regarding Louvana actually having a team, they would be able to participate in this league based on the fact that there are no age limits. So essentially, if we were to have a league or a team in Louvana, 11 and 12 year olds would not have an issue. They wouldn't have to travel. They would be formed into one team, if that makes sense. Also, we're currently the AAU league that is in Central Virginia is made up of teams from Charlottesville, Albemarle, Louisa, Orange, and Greene County. Spotsylvania County was put on there at the last minute. They might be joining the league. To become a member of the AAU affiliation is $300 annually. And to join this specific league, league, the team would have to pay a $200 per team league fee. Regular season, including playoffs, is basically August to mid to late November. It's about a 12-week program. Right now, we've come up with an annual forecasted budget, which includes, this is basically the startup year. And everything from helmets, mouth guards, athletic tape, you name it, anything that we would need or the team would need to facilitate a team from Louvana is included in here. Some notes from this page. Game day, there would be two game days essentially each season. Each team hosts two home games to where league members, Greene County, Madison, Spotsylvania, they would all come to Louvana or go out to another county and play their game one Saturday. You guys have any questions about this page? Essentially, the player registration is set at 125, which is pretty consistent with any startup program. And after talking with Mr. Custer, who presented the idea at the last meeting, 40 youth would be a max number for one team. 25 would be a minimum. So that's why these numbers are based off of 40 youth. And after the first year, after startup costs have gone, this would be an annual budget to maintain the team and activities for one season. Do you guys have any questions? That concludes. Yes, ma'am. That would be $125. That would include equipment rental, jerseys, practice uniforms, things like that.
And you said that playoff, you mentioned Saturday.
Every game would be Saturdays. Practices would be three times a week. And every team makes the playoffs, so you're guaranteed at least one game. So essentially, it would be seven games. And if you made it to the Super Bowl, you would play the following Saturday.
What's the insurance company?
Currently through AAU, coaches and players would be insured. So
that's part of the $125.
Yes, but if we were going to charge, or Mr. Custer, or whatever we decide to do, to break even, it would be about $165 a kid annually
for the second year.
If there are a lot of other established AAU travel recreational football teams that easily can charge $200-$300 because they started 10 years ago.
Second year should be less, shouldn't it?
Well, it is less.
Right. Yeah. The further you get into it, like the organization, suck a little away.
So you're looking at body
and also,
you would need. No, you're getting five.
No, 13.
No, 13.
You're getting five.
Yeah.
18 is the requirement. 13 is the base.
So.
The five is included in the squad.
Got it. Hold on.
The teams, they play green and so forth, right?
Correct.
How did the school want to train?
Parents.
Parents. Oh, my God. I didn't see anything out there.
So essentially, they would, you know, maybe carpool certain weekends. I mean, right.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
First week of August. Registration typically takes place April, March or April.
Football
in the fall.
So if this is expanded to, it's fine. But 2 years ago, when everybody rallied together to set up a lacrosse league around here, that took some doing. Maybe this is a little more expensive than a lacrosse league. Maybe you could have cost more stuff. And it won't be just $1,400 a year. I can assure you that even with the $5,000 that paid by the kids, it won't be $1,400 next year, because there'll be another requirement going on or an extra thing here. It'll always be some money. But the closer we can get to really neutral each year, the more likely it is that it's a good sport for them and for our community.
My suggestion would be to defer this for a year, do some fundraisers, interested parties, spend some in the fall and the winter doing some fundraisers, and which is what the lacrosse league did. See how close you can come to that 18 grand.
Would you still have the lacrosse field? Funding themselves. They're funding themselves totally.
It's all parent and organization funding.
Mr. Custer, is your intent to get this league started this year?
Oh, it's going to happen this year. I mean, I just would like you guys to. It has to. I'm not going to let the kids sit.
Okay. So that's all we have here. Is there any other information?
Not for me.
Sure.
Pads. Shorter pads is included in the pads. I just didn't write it up in there. I was waiting for somebody to mention that. We'll take volunteers.
Do they have the fields practice? They're going to practice at the same time?
Well, Right now, I believe they've been in touch with Mr. Custer. I don't want to speak too much for you, but they've been in touch with the middle school, and they've been working with the principal there. So they would have field space, either for themselves or through Parks and Rec. I'm not sure. Right now, there's no... Right now, there are no practice. There is no practice equipment. Pads, dummies, things like that.
So now, that's probably not what said a lot, but I just want to make sure you understand it. I love it. I think it's great. I'm proud of my son or grandson. I'd be jumping all over it. But it is one more thing on top of an already pretty tight, only 5-person partial rec department. So every time we add one more letter, we have to be careful and consider that. Program expansion is fantastic, because that's what we want to do with the partial rec program. But it sometimes requires resources.
And then the other thing is the $125, do we have scholarships for children?
We will always have scholarship. Yes, ma'am. That runs for every program.
It seems to me that a lot of it's just one-time costs. It's like getting it started and then the students come here and play. I mean, obviously, you know, I hear that the sons and grandsons reference. God gave Jonathan many gifts. Playing football was not one of them. And he does not need, he's just not a football player. So, I mean, I'm not terribly opposed to, especially when it's one-time startup cost kind of things. You know, that makes sense to me. I mean, I think that when you start looking at an operations gap of $1,440, you know, if you've got enough interest right now where the community's already, I mean, with this sort of short time span, you're willing to go in there and get this started. I mean, it's clearly a gap in what we have between D League and varsity sports kind of thing. So it's
and then they'll cover the cost then.
That would be my understanding, yeah.
It'd be pretty close, but we'll have to see it for 2 years.
Right.
We just have to come in.
As long as they're not in Custer
Strap. Get a lot of donations.
That's right. That's right. So,
do we need a motion?
I think we require, I mean, obviously, when you start talking about that sort of money.
We'll give you a formal motion. So it's worded. We've got the dollar number. 19th meeting.
Okay.
We just need your concurrence to go forward with so they can start working on, start getting equipment lined up, and start getting vendors and things like that. But, you know, frankly, it's not a terrible big amount of money, but there's lots of things going on, a terrible big amount of money for the community. As long as we have your concurrence, so we can move forward and get lined up.
I think since they're going to pay for it themselves for next year, it'll be something different, I guess.
There you go. That's great work.
Yeah.
Good
work.
Do you have good concurrence?
Keep
him
out of jail.
You have
him.
Keep him out of jail.
Yeah. He's
so
tall. Heroes.
Mr. Weaver's loan in the pro, $18,000. I think
you're safe there. Mr. Custer's going to work really, really, really hard on this.
Well, I'm looking at the second year. That's, yeah, they're going to be self-sufficient. That's what I'm looking at. It's not concurring.
Yeah, I was just thinking about you know, they say if we do this, then somebody else will come forward and want to start something and so forth. And there's wrong with that.
No, I don't think that's
true. If somebody else comes and we think it's something to be done, we help them get started, and they move on their way. And then whenever we get our parks and recreation expanded, more money, then more people, and we don't have to worry about it.
They were just confused on that first block. They're supposed to actually fill the rest of the motion in.
yes.
So I feel for schools, they understand that now. And okay. So this upgrade electrical lighting system security looks simple elementary in the amount of, that's the formal motion. But down below is the explanation of what we're doing.
Now, will the public be able to pick up on that later on when they look at their iPads or whatever? Can they?
On this, that, this form, with the updated change, we can have that back.
Yeah, back in them, just so they can see it.
Sure, absolutely.
Okay, back.
If you would kind of scroll back down a little bit to the explanation, the second line in there, the actual bulbs can no longer be purchased due to age to repair itself.
Can't necessarily speak on behalf of Ms. Pace, but I would assume with possible elections coming, maybe something with the equipment that she has, it has to be reprogrammed
maybe
during
the primaries coming in.
Possibly.
Next Tuesday.
It looked like a big hump there. That's the reason I
don't know enough to go with it either, so we'll ask Ms. Pace and then just send you an email on it. Yeah, I'm sure it's one of the specific
things. Yeah,
we'll mark it.
I just kind of. Okay.
Yep.
And let's look at 219.
Item 219.
That's Blue Ridge Juvenile Detention Center. Yeah. I noticed that you made the debt payment, but you don't have any of the juvenile costs and all that usually goes in. Probably you're going to do two months at one time later on. Is that it?
Do we do the regular operational payment monthly or quarterly?
I want to say it's quarterly.
I think the quarterly payment is like $160,000 or something like that. The debt payment is much smaller, but
I think
the quarterly operational payment. So it probably just doesn't show up in this one, but again, we'll check that and let you know. We checked that actually last year, and I pulled the research on those.
Yeah.
But there's two different numbers, and one, I think, is the quarterly payment for operations, and one is the debt payment that's on a periodic basis. We'll pull an email.
And I'm still curious about how efficient the things are. We've sort of talked about that before, and those costs been going up, I guess, because you have less services to give, or not less services, but less people going in. But is anyone actually checking some way to see how efficient things are going? Or
you're a really efficient county administrator as a member of the board there, and I meet with them every single time, and all of us that are on that board, other county executives, scrutinize their records, their bookkeeping, their audits, and are very, very closely watched their numbers. We do tours of the facilities and how they operate. We suggest changes in operations, and actually the operations costs are going down for next year. So I'm personally very satisfied with lots of scrutiny, and it's not just me. It's other executives from Carl Pepper, from Albemarle, from Louisa, and I think it's pretty tight.
Now here's probably a tough one. Not interested, but this is more curiosity than anything else. 244 Mansfield Oil Company, vehicle fuel. You have a cost out there. How much does that run that we're either saving or how much a gallon would that be that you're actually paying for something like that?
We'll have to pull it, see, because we don't, on this listing it doesn't show the gallons or what the bill will have. Something under my volume, so we can pull it, see and find out what our average cost is from various.
Because you have a variation in gas, I guess, from $3 up to $3.50 or $3.75. And I'm so curious if we really are saving.
Okay. Now, but Mansfield Oil Company is not from the state program.
Right.
But so have Joe just a list of all of the various fuel sources we use, what's the average fuel cost from each one of those, and then what percentages we use from those.
Okay, created them. I thought that was a lot of dirt being moved over there. A lot of stone, site improvements, dirt, $4,275, and that raises more than just money on this part. Can we talk about that one a little bit?
Oh, yeah, the dirt that was bought was special infield dirt that has helped, is going to help get the baseball teams to play. It's not a drying agent, but it's got drying agents mixed in with the dirt. It's a typical protocol for most of your ball fields, and it will allow baseball teams to get on back on the fields faster after we have rain or snow or whatnot. We've got a number of thumbs up. That's why they make it in Luxstone.
Maybe
they're willing to sponsor.
I was thinking about extra dirt the county supposedly had around and they were moving around and all that. Why you'd be buying dirt? So
that wasn't special dirt, and that was all absolutely used. For really good purpose. Because
maybe that's not the best term to use, special dirt.
The two new fields that it's going to create are the base. It's the base for the two new fields at Pleasant Grove. Because all that dirt that was out the front by the highway got moved over to the two new fields.
I knew they were going to do that. Yeah, and we did save thousands of dollars.
But you still need some more cubic yards of dirt to finish those off.
Yeah, now there. And we're going to have all the dirt down here.
I don't want to spend too much talk on dirt, but a lot of the dirt, actually, no, so a lot of the dirt that we currently have on our athletic fields, ball fields, it's got that clay mixed in, and when it rains and dries out, it's a safety issue. And for those two fields out there right now, there's a 2 to 3 inch lip where if you were a shortstop or second baseman, I'm surprised somebody hasn't gotten hurt.
So this is important.
Important? Yes, sir.
It's important.
Yes, sir.
It comes from us, or maybe it comes from local areas, but
we heard a bunch of dirt politicians, and we just kind of walked out of there.
Yes. Okay. Have one more. Okay, let's look at 482. I know there's nothing to be done, but I'm just sort of curious. Here it is, the school's been built. We've been in it now for a year. And look at all these school construction projects that's still there. We're talking about like $166,000. Seems to me that why are we still going this long? And looks to me like that account would be that $78 million would be closed, but now we would have already spent it, or I'm on the wrong track. What's going on here?
I'm sorry, the school staff is always the most experienced, most knowledgeable, so you can answer your question.
The school project is kind of coming to a close, and then Ms. Horlocker and I have been working on the high school cost, kind of one of the board directives to give to the board. We're hoping to do that within the next 1 to 2 meetings. But as far as some of these costs here, there's just a lot of invoices that are coming through, and they're coming through late, and they're just trying to finish.
A year late?
Yeah. I mean, you know, especially with the construction, I mean, they held out a lot of retainage for a lot of the issues that they had within the school.
Is there some control over this stuff? I mean, how do you get a bill a year later?
I mean, this is the control of that stuff. Like, for instance, they don't do something with the contract.
Well, I know they are doing that. Something else. No, I mean, she had talked about some of the electronics and some of this stuff that wasn't right, and they weren't going to pay some of this until they came back and got it right. Here you have, you know, furniture and things like that. Well, that should have been in the school to begin with. Furniture, fixtures, and equipment, supplies, furniture. You know, it just goes on and on and on here. So
that's a little bit of a misclassification, because that was actually for the score boxes at the fields, the building and construction and the work that went in and the outfitting of those score boxes on line 487. That's for that one. So I asked to see about that.
Okay, gentlemen. I'm ready to make a motion. Does somebody else want to make it?
Any other changes to the exceptions?
No. Should we?
consent agenda?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion is made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mr. Holbrook. All in favor? Opposed? Chair goes aye. Passes 5-0. No items of unfinished business. Do we have any items of new business?
Yes.
Mr. Hollenbrook.
I had one, two, and three. I sent it to the other day.
Mr. Hollenbrook.
Brought to my attention, and I did some research, our code compliance officer is a 20-hour a week position. That's been that way for some time now. And we're basically turning into a voluntary compliance company, I guess is the best way to put it. We set, along with the Planning Commission, ordinances and SUP requirements. And basically speaking, that 20 hours a week isn't covering, it can't be physically done properly. So over the last few years, we've turned into, for no better way of saying it, a voluntary compliance company. If you voluntarily comply and come in and voluntarily say that, for instance, I'm putting up a sign, and you come in and you say, I need a sign, you'll be charged $155 for a sign permit. You get your receipt, you go out of High Tech Signs or whatever company, come in and put your sign up. Or you open a business in this county and you put up a sign. The county has no requirement that you let the county know that you're opening a business. There's no requirement at all. So unless you trip over it, you don't know that the business exists. Speaking with Mr. Sheridan a year ago or so, we discussed personal property tax, and there's no requirement. There is a requirement to file personal property tax, but it's voluntary compliance. Because if Mr. Sheridan doesn't know your business exists, he doesn't send out a personal property tax bill. And how could he? Or how, why would he? We have no control. This county has no control in any way, shape, or form of anything I just spoke of. Now we're talking about Science Crossroads in the future and the enormity of growth, the possibility of growth. And we as a county can't even control what we have now, which is fairly small. I've heard estimates that we maybe have 350 businesses here. Maybe we have 210. Depends who you talk to. No one really knows. But I do know that since 2005, we've issued 60 sign permits. Now, I can drive down Lake Monticello area and tell you where there should be 60 sign permits right off that. And you've got the rest of the 350, if you think the big number of businesses out there that aren't voluntarily compliant. But is that fair to these folks that came in and said, I'm opening a business and I know that I need a sign permit and I want to pay my money right now and I want to be upfront about it, and I don't want anybody anywhere. And by the way, I'm going over to Mr. Sheridan's and let him know right now I'm opening a business and I have $110,000 worth of personal property.
Well, he evaluates that too, also.
If someone comes in and volunteers that information, there's a business in this county that's been there for 30 years. It's in Mr. Weaver's district. No one in county staff knew it existed. They do $22 million in business. So, and you just opened your eyes. I'll tell you the business later. Kids Jerry Road. Kids Jerry Road. Kids Jerry Stone Road. Anyway, that being said, I'd like to make a long see the code compliance officer's position puts full-time on a, once again, six-month trial basis, much like we just did. Reported, I'd like to see a report like we do building permits and building inspections, a monthly sheet that we get, a monthly list of what the gentleman has done in the last, in that 30 days, so we can track it and track the necessity of having a 40-hour work week. And we'll look at it again in January month. And take a look in with the county administrator's help and Mrs. Fitcher's help, identify whether that needs to be in next year's budget or whether it's not. But as we stand right now, we're missing out on revenue.
How does a place get built?
You don't build it. You know, let's say let's say someone comes and leases that property and opens a business. Well, you don't need a SUP. You don't need anything. You just open up. You open the doors.
Yeah, but in the Cunningham district, you're talking about a place $22 million. Did they have to build something in that area?
It's been there for 30 years. In the woods. What usually happens in most localities is you have to get built, you have to get a business license.
Yeah.
And the business license,
now we don't have that.
We don't have that.
We do not
have, and we don't have people. So we don't have any, we don't have any traffic of business. When I opened my business, I called the county offices and said, what do I need? And they said, nothing. That was the answer. And I said, you're kidding me. In fact, I drove down here for sure. And I couldn't believe it.
God bless you.
I agree. But the fact of the matter is, we've passed ordinances. And we have SUPs with stipulations that aren't being followed. I can't, it's impossible for a 20-hour a week person to follow up on, not to mention if you're out injured for a month and you're counting on someone else to pick up the slack and it isn't happening.
How do we go about that? Actually, correcting that? I know you went 40 hours.
Well, that's, I want to test it out for.
Yeah, but we have a list of certain businesses now, do we not?
No
businesses we have on our list.
We do not.
He said that we did.
We do have a list because
we have a list of the ones that you know about.
No.
That's correct.
We don't
that's
have a list.
That's what I'm
asking. The ones I don't know about, I don't have a list of.
We don't have a true list. That's right. And that's what the point I'm trying to make is we don't have a list. And Mr. Cheddar.
Well, yeah, what I'm saying is he has a list
of what we know about.
So therefore, if you had that list and someone who's doing the compliance and they see this business and it's not on that list, it looks to me like it's obvious that they better start checking on that.
Giving my full-time guide.
Evidently.
And I think that that's what you're going to see.
Well, I think what we want to be careful of here is you know, applying solutions and search for problems. I mean, we don't know precisely what we have at stake here. So if this is something we'd like to explore, Mr. Nichols, if you'd like to discuss it with the commissioner, we'll probably find out exactly, you know, that's probably why not we even have a problem together.
Well, let's do it. I hear two different issues you're talking about.
Right.
One is, what he's talking about is that we don't identify all the businesses. That's one issue.
That's what
he's also saying. There's ordinances out there that we have, SUPs we have out there. We do not know if people are really in compliance. And that's where the compliance person comes out to check and make sure that the ordinances we have in place are being applied.
So do we see a tidal wave of non-compliance issues?
We don't know. I mean, that would be really simple to go ahead and apply. But that's why he says, well, Mr. Chairman, we can add on for 6 months. Full time, and then see if there's any
it should be a full time position to start with. Our
county has grown to the point. Now we're adding on Zion's Crossroads. And if you're truly serious about what's going to happen in growth in Zion's Crossroads, then you have to be honest with yourself that the present staff will not be able to handle that.
Now that's another point. That's entirely interesting.
That's another issue. That's a third issue.
That's a third issue. But what I am pleading with you to go along with me on this is, and you never heard me say ad staff. This is a necessity. We've cut staff over the last 4 years to the breaking point, and it's now broken.
We haven't cut staff, Mr. Allen, but we've done
over the last way out of our task. Over the last 4 years.
Staff hasn't gone down.
I don't think staff has
done full work on that.
That used to be a full-time position. And it's not.
So?
Maybe before Scott. He's been part-time for two or 3 years.
I'm not sure that it has been. Maybe he was full-time, but I don't become American.
He wasn't. Bottom line, what I'm asking for is that position should be put to 40 hours a week for 6 months.
1 year, because if he goes full-time, he has to go to benefits. And we have to,
maybe
a one-year benefits package.
I concur with you, but let him go ahead and have a month to go check some of this and find out where we are and know where we're going, because we're talking about a half a staff salary. Let's look at that and then come back in a month and go with your proposal and look and see if that's a valid proposal with what he has. Does that make sense? I'm not against it.
We keep deferring.
We have studied this before.
So far today, we've deferred three things. Let's make some decisions here.
I was just looking at the letter that was just given to us from this picture. And it says, below are identified needs that should be met for the veteran staff. Heightened code enforcement activity. The zoning staff will conduct a drive-by inspection on all public roads in the county. This inspection will find potential violations to track signage in occupant vehicles and illegal businesses. Continuous monitoring could occur. Special use permit review. Properties holding a special use permit have conditions established by the Board of Supervisors. Inspection and abatement issues could occur. Those are the two things you're talking about that need that this person would do. You would find the illegal things. You would find the things that you're talking about. So we already have somewhat of a job description. One sounds like a lot for one person, but we talked about that code person being full-time a couple of years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
But we never followed through.
Well, it was one of those ones where there wasn't a lot of extra money. Right. You just look at it. We were doing it on the short, and it was just agreed to the time of the discussion about it. Just to leave it as a part-time position. I don't have a problem with trying to expand it, because I do think there's things they could do. And our planning department is by no stretch of the imagination plenty for them to do all the time. Lots of work. So it would be nice to have extra staff, but it is a $24,800 price tag annually to go from the current 20-hour to an annual benefit position.
We just saved $55,600 dollars. But Mr. Weaver, my point here is, if you pass an ordinance, you better be able to enforce it.
I don't think anybody disagrees with you.
Prior reports before me, the planning commission spent 6 months working on a sign ordinance. Got sent back from this board for another look. And said that again and approved unanimously the second time it came to the board. Now, it's never been enforced. Now take that and the SUPs that we set standards on are not enforced. So
there's an initial problem with that though, because the one time it was attempted to be enforced, it was actually overturned to the court because a lot of the signs which are grandfathered were not properly documented.
But now we've countered that, otherwise you wouldn't have voted for it in the last
year. But we do have a problem, Bob. There is a problem here, and I concur with
you. I went over that with Mr. Payne when that was passed, and there weren't any real holes in that sign ordinance.
So I believe Mr. Nichols is going to speak with Mr. Sheridan. We're going to have something brought back to the board in a month.
Well, that's got nothing to do with that. That's got nothing to do with the code. That's different. You're talking about
we discussed a lot at a time here. So if we're talking about code compliance officers, we'll talk about it again in a month, correct?
No.
We are not talking about
I'm going to make a motion that we put code compliance.
Well, let me say this. To make a motion, a lot of times, if it's something like this, we usually have it on the docket. I'm not trying to nitpick so everybody will know where we're going on that. It's usually put on the agenda. And then we can look at it. That's what we've done historically. Rather than put it in at the end, an old business, a new business. And we all bring up things like that. And I'm not against this. I'm just trying to get a procedure here.
Obviously, within the rules about the rules, everybody says it's perfectly within procedure. But, it is tradition of the band to go ahead and give it time. Yeah. So, Mr. Sheridan, be able to return to us in about a month.
I can give you this extension, Mr. Sheridan, we'll look at it, but it'll give you a similar type of report that you got tonight on voluntary contributions. Something short and sweet kind of covers all the bullets on what the alternative and options are.
And if there is really something that we're missing in terms of,
it needs to be done.
Officer needs to be on the ground, see in this month.
And I think we'll look at that.
About three different issues here. And
yes.
So I don't know what you're after here. One is compliance with ordinances. That's one issue. Another issue is, we're not identifying businesses. We don't know where businesses are. That's a second issue. And then there was, I forget what the third one is, but there's two or three different things.
The solution for all three of those was deemed to be a full-time code compliance officer.
So the solution for all three of them is not a full-time compliance officer, is my point.
Well, that's the answer we're going to get from
solutions for each one.
And that's the answer we're going to get from staff.
Fine, but I would suggest that either it's the next meeting or the meeting after that, presentation or a discussion on what those three issues are now the best result.
Because we need to have something
but done. I agree on part of the problem. There are issues that are there that need to be dealt with.
Yeah, I don't think there's any disagreement on that. I think it's just a question of process at this point.
Because it is not just bringing a code compliance officer on for an extra 6 months or a year, because even then we'll miss stuff. We don't have any way of knowing formally, unless Mr. Sheridan catches it, unless someone knows about it, unless they come in and want to put their name on the list, we don't know for sure what businesses are.
Well, the Sheridan would have anything to do with code compliance. It would be Mr.
Sheridan. I'm going to speak now or a public comment, but it's entirely up to you.
Yeah, you can speak now, as a matter of fact.
You can't say that we don't have a list. It makes it look like we're just sitting up there.
Thank you.
And I certainly am not trying to counter-argue with Ms. Thornbach, but it is clearly two different issues. I think his issue is we would need more codes enforcement, more hours in the week to try to enforce the codes we have. For example, used to be a big thing that Mr. Payne would remember called a junk automobile ordinance, and we still have it, I think, on the books, but do we enforce it?
Okay.
That's Mr. Weaver, something that, but I do need to speak to the issue associated with a list of businesses in Flint. Yes, we do have a list. We're required to have a list, and we try to be very complete with that list. It's methods of disclosure involved looking at the paper. I mean, literally drive around looking. We look for advertisements. If we've missed one, hey, there's a method for dealing with that, and I appreciate you bringing it. I'm pretty familiar with Kids Dairy. Not as good as familiar with Mr. Weaver is, I suspect. And if there's something over there that we've missed because it's off-road or whatever.
No one knows anything. If they see something, they don't see that there's anything wrong.
So I would see if the board elects to expand the hours of the codes enforcement officer. Really, we work with building inspection, the building inspections department too. If they see something, a new business, they do bring it to their attention. And we try to work collectively to do that. We try very hard to have an accurate list because it does involve business personal property specifically. How could that be addressed even more completely? Well, you mentioned it earlier, BPOL. If you got to have a license to operate, then that's I'm not sitting here advocating that, but...
But it's tax different, is it not? A business is tax different also, is it not?
Do you have the same personal property rates that apply, but they have to report? But yes, sir, it is. To put a point on it, it's based on the purchase price of the item versus... Absolutely. Please don't walk away or give the public the impression we don't have an accurate business list.
That's what I was saying.
Yeah, I think it might have come across. Maybe I misunderstood.
What I was saying is you have the information that's available to you.
And we work hard to keep that accurate.
Yes, sir.
It seems to me there are three different things that are being discussed.
Yes, there are.
One of them is picking up new businesses that are established in the county that don't require formal processes of rezoning. That's first. The second thing is compliance with ordinary regulatory requirements. Somebody opens a hat shop in a residential district or something like that. Third thing is compliance with specific regulations like special use permit commission. The third one is one that's done routinely when you establish the business. You know, when an ASCA came in with a special use permit and there were inspections made to make sure that they complied with the condition. That's sort of a startup issue. The second one is a classic ongoing zoning matter, and that is how you enforce zoning matters ongoing, not startups, you know, not when the guy moves in with what he's doing later on. And I can tell you that in every locality with which I'm familiar, the practice is to enforce by complaint. So that if the guy opens a hat shop and he's in compliance with the zoning ordinance, and he later goes out and starts selling anvils, and anvils are not permitted use, the zoning administrator is typically not going to run around looking for the anvils, the bootleg anvil sellers. She's going to respond to somebody. When somebody comes in and says, the guy next door is going to be selling illegal anvils, then she'll send the guy out to do that. The first thing is this issue of the new businesses that come in. That's really a revenue issue. And I think, I'm not even sure, I want to talk to Mrs. Pitchin before we talk about this in detail, and that's one thing we ought to talk about, is the concept of zoning differences. And that is when, and I don't think we do that. Do we?
Zoning
clearances?
No.
That's one thing a lot of localities do, and that is Mr. Holmberg comes in and wants to open an ice cream shop. He has to go to the zoning administrator and have the zoning administrator issue him clearance that ice cream shops are permitted in the district he wants to locate in, and they either doesn't need a site plan or he's got a site plan or whatever. That would help if we did that, because that would then turn up the new business, which would then be shared with the commission revenue that he could add to his list.
Which I think is very complete. It may have some omissions, and we welcome any help from the code enforcement. Pardon me? Yeah, because we get the business tax returns are returned back to us. Can there be some that are missed? There certainly could be some that are missed, but code allows us to send them a supplemental billing. In fact, we did that just this week if that one got by, but I didn't want to give you the impression that we just don't have a very accurate list. I think it's pretty darn good. If there's an omission, we would greatly appreciate the help of staff or any interested citizen to help us to refine that. But it's pretty good.
I
would just lay one last thing out, if I could. In fact, if they don't report, if we know there's a business, you know, we have to send that, and Mr. Ohnbach knows that's been be a recent business owner. We send out the business personal property form, and you refuse to return it, I can assign a value to your property arbitrarily and increase it annually. And I have to come up with a base. I can assign a value to it, and I have, and did this year too, because some of them, but not arbitrarily, based on considerable amount of research.
I just want.
Thank you.
I just wanted to add that
both departments need to know where businesses are for two different reasons. So my suggestion when I heard about the concern from Mr. Ellenbrook was that because the staff is lacking probably in both departments, that if we increased the amount of hours for a code compliance officer, that when we do that drive-by inspection, we would note the business name. And planning staff, zoning staff, would then know where the businesses are. And for our reasons, we could check into that. We would also provide a list to the Commissioner of the Revenue. Not saying that he doesn't already have a list, but so he can compare his list against the list that we could provide, because there are many businesses, they're small businesses, and there are many businesses operating from homes and from their own properties, and those are hard to, without a business license, those are hard to identify. That's where the connection is.
And one potential thing, too, we'll look at this, but one of the ways to potentially just get some more hours is just run the existing position to 29 hours a week. Because if we do it for more than 29 hours, you have to go to full benefits. And if you go to full benefits, you got to run for a year. So you go to 29 hours a week to get some increased compliance, see if that works too. And that's about a $7,800 cost over the course of the whole year. So over 6 months, you've got $3,000 more. I'm not, because we just really started talking about this earlier, I'm not 100% convinced we want to take somebody to full-time now, but I certainly do think it's a really good thing to look at. He's been a kind of a band-aid part-timer for a long time, so we can come back with a good impression pretty well.
All right. Do we have any other items of new business? Hearing none, we'll go
ahead. Yes.
We have more items of new business. Mr.
Ellenbrook, Mr. Nichols, Mr. Nichols. I know, this is why I sent out to you ahead of time, because I've got a request from over a payment or a cell phone statement. A meeting ago or 2 weeks ago, I talked about potential cell phone policies. Right now, we have really only one alternative. If you're required to have cell phone access, either data plan or non-data plan, the county acquires the cell phone, gets the cell phone in, issues it to the member, pays the bill, manages the bills, et cetera, et cetera. That's a relatively typical way of doing it, except it's not very typical anymore in the United States, because many companies make localities are looking to cell phone stipend policy. Instead of bringing the cell phone in, plus contracting with Verizon or Sprint or some other company, bringing the cell phone in, we own it, it's our plan, you pay the bills on it, and giving it to a member to use, which is a little bit problematic because you're really not supposed to use it for personal use if it's a government-provided phone. But we put it all on it. The other alternative to that would be, in my case, under my employment agreement, I'm required to provide a cell phone, and I get a stipend for that, so there's a stipend for my technology, my home computer for this, for things that I have to use in my work. That leads to some technical potential problems, legal problems, because if in my position someone wants to look at this phone and discover items on there, it clearly, at least things on it clearly could be, it would be discoverable. I acknowledge that, but you know, me calling my wife and my daughter and my granddaughter on here is not illegal at all, because I'm paying for the phone, I'm just getting stipend for the portion of government use. Now, that's one slant on it. Mr. Payne and I talked about this at length. What I'd like to show you is at least a draft stipend policy to give your feedback on, are you interested in having some phones, like for social services, there's some shared phones, those still need to be governed because we get that phone, we issue it to someone, and then when they change over duty group, they hand it to someone else. Or maybe some non-data phones that are only for government use and used by people that are in the field, but just the phone used here for work. But other folks, Commissioner Revenue is an example who has a request here, myself, the Emergency Services Coordinator. She doesn't have a county issued cell phone either. I would propose that a cell phone stipend would be simpler faster, easier, and at worst, cost neutral. But cost is not just the only thing, because it doesn't take into account the amount of staff time to manage Verizon, to call them and pay bills and stamp and certify bills. You wouldn't have to do any of that if you had a stipend policy. Now, there are certainly some cases of people where their phone, I'll show you this on the screen here, their phone is kind of their lifeline, and they use it for both personal and for home use, and the number is, you know, they tied it in for 10 or 12 years, and so there are some questions in the middle here that I'm not sure exactly how to overcome those, but if we set a date when it says that county is only going to be using stipends from now on, what do you do about someone that has an existing county phone? Can we sell that older instrument or give that older instrument to that individual? They keep that number. When they leave, it's just gone because there's not much cost in there. That's the simplest way to do it. But, for instance, we just issued a new iPhone the other day to a staff member. What do you do about something like that? If we're not going to maintain phones, what do you do about something like that? So I need to work out some procedures. But I need a sense from the board on whether you're interested in entertaining a kind of more progressive, in my view, cell phone spectrum policy versus the typical way we do it now that almost everybody gets issued a phone. And Mr. Payne can certainly comment on the legal aspects of that. But these are the things that I still need to kind of clear up and consider. I just need your sense on which way to go, and then I can also then act on the request that's coming from the staff member for stipend for the phone that they don't have, but are required to have.
Jimmy, can I make a comment on that? Yes, ma'am. You've heard me express concerns about, I guess what you could call transparency issues. If I make a call, and of course I'm not speaking personally, just to raise a whole set of other issues involving privilege and things like that. The typical county employee uses his phone for business and personal purposes. One of my concerns is you're exposing that person's personal records to scrutiny under the Freedom of Information Act or under discovery or court subpoena procedures. And that's a concern for me. One of the concerns I have would be, for me as county attorney, somebody comes in and says, I want to see all these text messages related to, you know, XYZ development. And so the suspension has a self-interest, you know, not pick her because she's direct planning. She has a stipend like this. Somebody's got to go through all of her records to see what text messages are related to XYZ development. My concern is, what if we miss? Now, if we've got a county phone, we've got the instrument there, and we know there's nothing on there except county business. So it's relatively easy to do that. It's much more difficult if you have somebody that is, let's say they've got a family plan, and they've got a teenage boy, and the teenage boy spends 9 of his 12 waking hours writing text messages, and they're all tied to the same number. I'd be concerned with making sure we can comply with the Freedom of Information Act request or whatever it might be. The other thing is that there's an issue that has been raised, and I saw this in the general news media the other day, with respect to the federal government, and that is a lot of the current federal officials, the higher officials, apparently are not, they're making a lot of communications, whether they're text or email or phones, with a number of different instruments. And you can't really tell what they're using. And in some cases, nobody knew they were doing it. So if you've got I'm just going to pick an office because I think of the Secretary of State is making calls on his own cell phone that relate to business. How do you secure those records? How do you, and I mean secure in the sense of how do you find out about them?
get the same thoughts with the county. The final concern about this is something, again, that was raised in this same context, and that is, what about maintaining the records? So, for example, let's say Cal Walk used his cell phone for some kind of business, whatever it was, and when he left, it was his personal cell phone, he took it with him. And he's got the records that relate to county business on his cell phone. Well, I'm sure people do this, not me, because I have the same cell phone that I've had for years. You go down and get a new cell phone, you may or may not be transferring all those data from phone number one to phone number two. And you may just trash phone number one. And if you do, you go fishing, you drop it in the rivers, or whatever it might be. How we maintain those records, but we may need them. So, this is an item primarily for which Nichols and you to decide, but there are some issues that concern me about going away from county-owned instruments as a rule. Occasional appearances, Mr. Nichols and I are two, because both of us use privately on the phone. But as a rule, I think a lot of these issues are better answered with the county-owned instrument.
Well, what is we haven't even talked about the cost of these stipends. What do you figure that's going to be?
Well, they range all across the board. They go from $10 or $15
to $85
or $100 cost per hour. I've researched dozens and dozens of policies from localities, from universities, from different things. Alcohol copies are $30. Our kind of draft proposal here would be $30 for a basic phone and $55 for a smartphone, preferably for a data phone. And while I understand the concerns, if this is my county phone, I can assure you today that people that have a county-issued phone are not using it for business only. It's their own only phone, and they use it for business and personal. We need to tighten that up. But significant folks in our county only have one phone because they're not going to carry two phones.
I understand this cost, but I'm talking about the total cost that everybody has put together. Is it $1,000, $5,000?
An example, we pay about $1,200 a month for county staff that have a phone. Forget social services and sheriff's office. We've got different pots. So county staff that have a phone, we pay about $1,200 a month. If you cost that out with the dollars on a stipend policy, it'd be about $980 a month. Now, that's not the whole picture, because maybe neutral, but what you save is the cost of paper, you save the processing bills, because I don't worry about bills anymore. All you do is it's a paycheck stipend, and it gets paid out, and then comes out. So if this is my county-owned cell phone, I can drop that in the river just as easy, because I'm a party I live with all the time. And so the reason goes to. So I share the concerns about discoverability, but I'd much rather carry my phone or a phone and be able to use it for all purposes rather than have to carry two phones on all the time. The vast majority of staff I've talked to, the vast majority of staff that have phones would be glad to have just a stipend so they can stop dealing with this. The ones that already have a county phone don't want to lose the county phone, they want to go to keep it because the number is the same number they've been using for family and for purposes forever. And then I've got some staff members who are saying, wait a second. I don't want to just get this stipend. It could cost more than that. Well, the amount of usage on here that's work for me is probably 40% of my work, maybe 50%. And maybe the stipend doesn't cover totally, but that's something to adjust on an annual basis. You look at the stipend, the cost of funds. My take on it is, it'd be great to go to that. There may be an exception policy. This draft has some exceptions in there. And it is the transition from one system to the other that will be a little bit complicated, but I think all this can be looked up. There's literally thousands of examples of other localities and organizations that do this now. So,
I've read the whole thing, and I think it's good in here.
I would like to see the state. So, it seems like a very
good You all are a little problem when it comes to stipend because we can't. I think it increases compensation for you that has to be voted on. If they got, like self-inspection, doesn't that change?
Yeah, well, like the best competition, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it would, because you don't have, you're not issued 10 points, so it would be just, it would be just a small 10 and a half, would be additional compensation.
So it'd be, that's a little bit different from elected officials, and I'm not sure how that affects constitutional officers. But their compensation is not the same as these elected officials. Their regular job jobs in a different way. So, so two things. A, I've got two individuals right now that are required to have county phones that don't have county phones, that are using their own phones. I would like to implement a stipend for them if I can do that. I'm not sure exactly what the dollar value needs to be permanent, and I'm not very interested, although the request is for retroactive, I'm not very interested in going retroactive on a plan that you haven't had before. But I think it's reasonable to set this up. But at the minimum, I'd like to get this policy chopped by constitutional officer colleagues, because they will have some comments on this, and then have the rest of the department look at it to see if all the board is not just anti site.
I think we should defer making the decision.
And I said that with some jest.
Yeah.
It was a good one.
Yeah, it's a good one.
But seriously, I think we should have looked into this.
But that information is on our iPad, so it's not something that we brought up the next minute.
That is correct.
I personally know for this to a stipend, even the personal cell phones are really discoverable. I mean, that's just not your business today, and there's nothing you can do about that. And there are SIM cards. I mean, it's not, you know, it's not terribly difficult to keep basic information on cell phones anyway, especially given some of most of the information is transferred, whether it's email communications or things, stuff that's in the cloud. I mean, most of it's pretty well documented, with the exception of the text messages. I don't know exactly if that transfers. But, you know, of course, you know, not to do phone conversations necessarily. So, you know, that's where, you know, it takes one and a half dozen another. It makes better sense to go ahead and do a site policy. Nobody needs to carry 3-4 cell phones around. So.
My only concern is the savings could be offset by 1 or 2 FOIA requests. The cost for
they have to pay for that as if they request freedom of information.
I think that's right. I think that would be a real small problem because typically they do have to pay.
Yeah, and most of the information that you have about asset protection rights would be elsewhere. Any emails is also already documented in your.
Sure. I mean, but if it's a FOIA request today with a government on cell phone, or a FOIA request tomorrow that also involves my personal cell phone, a FOIA request, and depending on how complicated it is, there are costs associated with what we recover from the requester.
Only certain things are FOIA. Instantaneous communication is not, email video can be much different. So,
we making the decision on this.
Well, I would like two things. I would like your concurrence that this is not out of bounds, so that I can now formally work with the constitutional officers and talk to the department heads, because this is my draft of doing after a lot of the research, but a lot of other people haven't chopped it yet. And there'll be things people think of that I don't. Secondly, I really need to have some latitude here to make sure to provide some policy. Let's assume this is my county-owned cell phone, and I've been here for 2 years, and that phone is what I use for my personal use to. And now the county says they're no longer going to provide cell phones. Can this 2-year-old, or 1-year-old, or 2-day-old instrument be transferred to me? Do I have to pay something for it if it's less than 1-year-old or whatever? Because I'm actually getting something of value. So I think there may have to be some numbers done. But I want at least general concurrence from you that type of policy is not out of bounds. So, like, put this together, smooth it up, and get it up for every child.
So you just want to be okay to look into
not the kind of thing that is up to a Democratic vote, I wouldn't suggest.
No, but at least you have an open idea.
Well, I have a really good idea, because I talked to a lot of folks that have the cell phones, and there's about 20 staff members of the county. Of those, including the constitutional officers, there's only one that was not interested in this for a couple of reasons. But we have to be really careful about having... If we're going to do this with stipend, you can choose stipend, or you can choose county-provided phone, or you can have this, then just leave it as it is. I don't want to budget because it's too complicated. But there are certainly circumstances where someone will have to have a county on phone for the type of phone it is, where it's just passed. It's a duty phone or something like that. The sheriff's office may have some specific reasons why sheriffs have to have a county on phone.
And the whole motivation behind this is you don't want to carry two phones. And you will save money.
Well, even if it's cost neutral, it has to save something because it's saving us processing every bill and setting up accounts through Verizon and things like that. And there's a thousand different reasons why this is good and bad, and everybody we can go to from different angles. It's just pretty vogue and common nowadays. But I'd like to pursue it. I'll come back to you with the final policy for your approval. This will be a county policy. And then I'd like to implement on July 1st if I can get it done and back to you. Well, I can't do that. Pretty quick.
That's two horses well beaten. We have any other items of new business at this point? Hearing none, we'll go ahead and move to our second round of public comments. Again, please remember to keep your comments directed to the board on topic in within 5 minutes. Anyone wishing to address the board?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Sherrod.
Mel Sheridan, 89 Covered Bridge Road. I just wanted to follow up on the cell phone issue. I've requested reimbursement for it because I thought it was appropriate because I've been using my personal phone for about the last 2 years. And so when I talked to Mr. Nichols and found out there was a technology stipend that had been kind of a precedent set, it seemed like a good idea. I firmly support the policy. And I'll tell you why, because I think for me, I had a county phone, and like anyone else has one. I used it for personal use. I mean, my family calls me, I answer the phone, I call them back. And I think it was more danger of me violating some policy for personal use of a county phone than it was my fear that I'm going to have to worry about it, my personal phone being FOIA'd. So in that vein, when I got a smartphone, which was a hand-me-down from my wife, if you really need to know, she got a talking phone, a Siri. I talked to our IT department, and they were very kind to help me set it up so that obviously I can take phone calls. If I get a call from my office because I'm out in the field looking at property, I obviously want to answer it, or from a staff member, board member. But more importantly, Jonathan's staff was able to help me do was set up so I can get my email, my office email, over my telephone. So I not only get text, I get my office email, I get staff telephone calls, and it really is. And in fact, because I have access to my office email, I have access to all my office files. I can take this phone instrument and pull up the 2004, budget documents that I saved on my desktop. It really is a nice asset. It's a great asset. When I get a call and somebody asks me about any particular item, say it happens to be something associated with land use, I can pull up the land use file, the Excel spreadsheet, on the phone and look to see if someone had turned in their... and then I have to blow it up really big and then move it a lot. But the point is, I've used it consistently. And when we talked about it, it was about, for a data package, it's about a little less than $60 a month for accounting cost, $58, I think, if Johnson can confirm that or not. So I asked for $50 as a reimbursement stipend because it seemed reasonable. It cost me quite a bit more than that for my personal phone. But the convenience for me, and frankly, the concern that if somebody said, I want to pull in Sheridan's county phone and I'm going to FOIA it and see out of the 500 calls he made in the last 2 months, how many of them were for non-business related? You know, I have no problem with you accessing my phone to see if there are any 900 calls or girlfriend. I mean, I'm very comfortable that you won't find any there. Unless my grandsons use it in the night. I don't know. But,
not that it's comfortable on there.
That you wouldn't find it. Thank you very much. I appreciate the learned attorney pointing that out. I would very much appreciate the fact that, and I really need to plan, you know, I need to budget for it this year. Obviously, I either need to save the $600 in my budget or I need to try to redirect it to some other pertinent cost. But I didn't want you to lose sight of the fact that someone that has their personal phone or the county phone set up with their office email has a lot more available to them than just to receive and make phone calls. And it's a handy way to do it. And I'll say it again. I think I was more vulnerable with the county phone and the ability to FOIA all the personal calls that we all take, you know, from our family, than I feel. I don't feel any vulnerability at all if you want to FOIA my text between me and Mr. Nichols, etc. Thank you for your help. And I'd appreciate, frankly, because it makes a difference in this fiscal year's budget, whether I get that authority and permission to get that stipend or not.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Sheridan, yes. Ms. Wilkins, because Ms. Wilkins was hired under the office and said that she'd have to have a phone. And there would be a potential stipend for it. The second, Mr. Sheridan's budget used to have a cell phone, a county cell phone, hasn't had, but still is required to have phone contact and access for his work. So list of people in the draft policy that list, you know, who would be, I'm sorry, it's not in there, it's on the spreadsheet attachment, but list who in the county would probably have what kind of phone for the work purposes. So I'd like to be able to go ahead and pay, set those stipends up, although I understand you have to do, we have to formulate down the policy.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Anyone else wish to address the board? Go ahead and close the second round of public comment. The board will now enter into closed session. Mr. Weaver.
Bob, do you want anything in personnel matters?
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Chairman. I move that Blue Banner County Board of Supervisors enter into a closed meeting pursuant to the provisions on personnel matters 2.2-3711A.1, Section 2.2-3711A.3 Real Estate, Section 2.2-3711A.6 Investment Funds, Section 2.2-3711A.7
The Code of Virginia 1950 as amended for the purpose of discussing these items. Sir, second. Motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mr. Hollenbrock. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0.
County Board of Supervisors convenes again in open session. Second and recorded vote needed.
Second. Motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mr. Chester. We do need a recorded vote, so we need Mrs. Booker and we need Mr. Hollenbrock. Now, where is Mr. Hollenbrock?
Hollywood Point.
Thank you, sir.
Moses already there, Moses.
What, Moses?
It's already on there.
Closed session.
Yes.
The director sees who had it all along. We're going to have the end.
Going
back down. I guess we did it. We did it, actually, sir. Any recorded vote, Mr. Hollenbrock?
Yes.
Ms. Cooker?
Yes.
Ms. Weaver?
Yes.
Mr. Chester?
Yes.
Mr. Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0. Mr. Weaver?
Being resolved to the best of my knowledge on the public business matters lawfully exempted from open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-3711-A of the Code of Virginia, 1950, and as amended, and only such public business matters as were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting was convened, were heard, discussed, or considered in the meeting.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mrs. Booker. All in favor?
All right.
And opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0.
This is Bill and Garner's job.
We will be going. here, Mr. Nichols?
The only thing I pulled up is just the sheet that kind of talked about where we were at and what the plan was, because I think the questions were about pay issues. That's the information as I know it. And then I think you saw this is Brent's memo. This just reflects that.
Fair enough. So, Mr. Nichols, how would you like this conversation to begin?
Well, the issue for me all along has just been one of the obligations of the county funds. I told the Social Service Board what I'm for is a paid plan in some form. I certainly had included originally in the 543 issue plan. I just don't know that it's legal to be too strong a word. I'm not sure that it's reasonable to obligate for pay raises, which are just the keep on giving, without incorporating it in your budget base. And I would be completely supportive. I mean, that's a board decision. It's not that I don't think the Social Services Board doesn't have some authority to make pay changes, but because it's an increase that's part of the budget base, I think it should be come to and be approved by the Board of Supervisors as part of the budget process or something like the budget process. And this raise is reported to cost, that the county portion approximately $12,000, which is not very much, but it increases the base.
So they're talking about the $12,262 that would be local funds, which we saw out of 2014 budget.
I'm not validating it because that's just the report number.
Right.
I'm sure students and your staff have gone through that.
Right.
It's the difference between
right.
The July 1st versus August 1st 3%, and it's the addition of the July 1st to the entire year 1-2%, and that's it, because everything else was in the budget base approved by the Board of Supervisors. And I understand that clearly there is swish in the budget, when you've got 35 positions fully funded, and there are some vacancies, there are some swish there, but if the goal is to fully fund and fully fill these positions sooner or later, the pay raises are going to stack up, and it's just part of the budget base that I think should be adopted and approved by the board. Since you're the only ones that have the approval authority for adopting the budgets and allocating funding.
Okay, so that's what you're asking. And to make it perfectly clear that whatever budget that we appropriate to the board, we have to be able to pay them.
We're
not asking for any additional
funding. Well, there is additional funding. Mm-hmm. And there will be next year. And if we don't, just follow me. If I heard the statement that, well, you just don't fund it next year, well, that's like giving someone a pay decrease next year. And it's a pay decrease. And we already said, and let me make a note, we already said no to the Commissioner of Revenue on almost the exact same thing, where he wanted to use money that was available to give pay raises across the board. In fact, had already done so before coming to us, and had to take it back because we didn't approved. Now, it would be like a slap in the face to him by us approving this, because it's the exact same thing. It's someone getting more than what the rest of the county employees are getting. And I understand that you're in a unique position, but so is he. And so is the treasurer's office. And weighing them all, everything equal, as equal it is. If you're putting the next board next year in a position of already being over budget from what we appropriated this year, and putting us in the bind of saying no, and you having to take those pay increases away from your employees, and that's not right. That's not ever is the right thing to give people pay decreases. Heck, it's bad enough that you don't get a pay increase. So when this was designed for this FY14 budget, pay increases were embedded for all county employees, everybody. And those pay raises have been given out, and everyone knows what they're getting. Now, this is an increase, and that's my only problem with it. It's an increase over what everyone else is getting. Not that everyone doesn't deserve it, everybody deserves a raise, but in this case, it's going to cause issues because we've already said no to other constitutional offices. And it puts us in a spot.
But the county gave you 2.5.
Yes, sir.
We gave you 2.5. Let me know.
Yeah. Where you get it?
I got a copy. You didn't see the letter that I guess it didn't do the 21st.
From Kathy? Sure. So, we we couldn't use the 2%. So well, if we had just gone on to 3, 4, and 5 on our people, we could have done that.
No, ma'am. That's not my point. My point is, I'm questioning what was appropriate. Was enough money to do a 3% from August 1st?
Right.
What the Social Services Board has decided. Seems to make sense to me, but it's not appropriate. July, 3% plus the extra, and August 1st through the end of the year, June 30th, the 1 and 2%. I'm suggesting that $12,000 just should be authorized by the Board of Supervisors. So it's in your base. You don't have to worry about it. You're still going to have some slush. You're still going to have some vacancies. You're still going to have some ability to adjust within there. I just think it requires to come to the Board. If that's not the case, the Board of Supervisors just needs to decide that. And I'm done. I'm not deciding it. I'm just suggesting that everyone else has been in the same case, same vote. It's all before the same vote.
Yes, sir.
This was too difficult for 21st of May for that chair. It was too difficult for
that chair.
Did all the supervisors get it?
Yes.
This way.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure. But I'm sure. Just, that board demanded salary increases with any constraints on that last allocated budget for fiscal year should have supported through the utilization of the staff turnover money or by other internal administrative means which is sufficient to cover $12,262. We do not intend to request this amount of $12,262 today. FY15 baseline of the future budgets. We fully expect to be within that budget as we've done in the past, and we ask that you contact us with any questions you may have. You also have to be here.
Yeah, that was sent.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. You know, if you look at next year's budget, I don't know if anybody's budget is guaranteed from year to year. If you give the school board, for instance, X dollars to work with this year, if they get less dollars to work with next year, they have no cut off charities, but do those things they have to do to deal with that budget.
So you think they should then decrease their salaries?
Yeah, that's what I was saying. They've got X number of dollars this year. Let's say they get less dollars next year. Then they've got to furlough people, do whatever, but deal within their budget. What I'm saying, social services is no different. We've got X number of dollars to work with this year. If the board so chooses to cut that budget by 1% next year, I'd give the money to total. We've got the law that to live within that budget. That's basically what we've got to say. And we've got to live within the dollars that y'all give to you.
We understand that.
Well, I mean, that's what we've got to say.
I think another point to be considered too. Steve has said the finds no other organization in the county, apparently other than the school, that has authority over setting its salaries. But that means, I think we've had enough discussion with Steve so that he has discovered that's not the case. The case here is that you have an administrative board. That's your choice to make what you have on it. But the responsibility of the administrative board is to set up salaries for its employees with the approval of the state, not with the approval of the county. And so here we are, the administrative board, we're doing, shouldn't be any surprise, we're doing what you would expect an administrative board to do. And it's our responsibility to do that. The laws that we've been administrative procedures that Steve has discovered that we've discussed with him.
The letter from Mrs. Bryant was I never received it in ASA. I ended up receiving it on the 23rd along with Mr. Weaver. These were CC'd in an email specifically sent to the two of us.
I don't doubt it.
It's
the one that I re-forwarded out to a couple of you later because there was an email address there on, and
yes,
I put this around on the website.
I sent it to everybody that made mistakes.
Is this the one that was wrong email address?
Right, I re-forwarded to you all on the 29th so that everybody could get it, but several of you, I
in any event, I mean, the bottom of the letter, and this is... Anything you want to share at this point? Are we good? Okay. Mrs. Brown actually ends the second last paragraph here. Yes, this Social Services Board plans to absorb whatever additional costs may accrue within its currently approved 2014 budget. Does that change?
No, we're not going to
increase
the
salary.
So we're not going
to
have to increase
$12,000 to $9,000. No,
but we're talking about next year, too.
That's my
problem.
I know. Sure. Yeah. Because then they'll decrease the salaries.
No, they're not going to increase salaries.
Well, maybe they're not, but that's the way it's headed.
You appropriate the money just like you do for the school system. And then they're within that amount. And if you can't, then we cut, just like the school systems. We cut. We cut. We go through that.
We're talking about salaries. We're not talking about paper.
No, but that's how you cut to get the money to meet your budget.
80% of the budgets are the salaries, personnel and benefits.
80%. Something's in that neighborhood. Yeah. I kind of like to move away from this one because I think we've got a pretty clear answer as to what exactly is going on with the county is and all that stuff. So, I'm not terribly concerned about that. So I was kind of hoping that this would be a little bit more of a learning experience for us rather than an interrogation process. I guess there's what, something on some number of seven positions that are currently filled with social services. Is that correct?
I haven't tested it.
Laura, would you have to know off the top of your head?
We have one full-time position, and there may be a few temporary positions that aren't filled, but the issue with that was the board had approved us to use turnover monies to bring in these temp part-timers to try and help with our caseload, and that is doing a lot of filtering.
So there are not seven positions just waiting to be filled with social services at the moment?
At the moment, I believe there's only one.
Okay. I know a little bit about state government, obviously, but social services is one of those areas where I just don't know. This is not my forte. It never really has been, because the relationship between the locality and the state, it's a lot like the school board to some degree, and there's some degree of a direct attachment, but at the end of the day, it's always been my understanding that social services boards were always appendages of the Commonwealth in a much more direct fashion than the school system ever would be. So my understanding has always been that social service employees were effectively state employees subsidized by the locality. Maybe that's not right, but it's close, I think. So when it came down to raises, I kind of assumed that you guys were just going to get the 3% raise that the Commonwealth of Virginia was going to give, and then obviously whatever you used to pay, I mean, obviously a social service worker in Franklin County gets a lot less than somebody in Fairfax, you know? So then that's really dependent upon the locality's commitment to pay scales. So in as much as that goes, I mean, could you elaborate a little bit on exactly what that relationship is? Maybe give me a bit of an education as to... Are you all state employees? Or are state employees, federal, I mean, state or local employees, or is it a mix, or is it someone unique, or just...
Who's insurance?
Give me the 101 class on how social service
works
in Virginia.
It's very unique.
It's
supervised and locally administered.
Okay.
It's a county benefit.
Sure, but we're...
Is it county benefit?
Yes.
So,
because we are locally administered, but state supervised. Mm-hmm. It's very unique and it's very different. But some things we follow under state, and some things we follow under county.
But you choose that originally, don't you?
you want to fall under?
Well, all of the local former social services and everything there is supposed to be locked and located.
Yeah, I don't think they don't choose. I think we, to some degree, choose for them in terms of the relationship.
Well, they choose.
They sign. The human resources director is signed by the social services department as their current one is constituted, and you select off there what things you participate with. Now, the Board of Supervisors could potentially change that, but currently it's signed by the Board of Social Workers, Director of Social Services, and that goes to the state. That's the human resources record of choice. And the only two things that participate locally now are the grievance policy and the income recovery policy.
Right.
So they're partially deviating agency, largely non-deviating, they follow the state.
We are non-deviating agency. If you look at our comprehensive plan, it says non-deviation is a local department that follows all of the state human resources policy called non-deviating agencies.
But those are partially non-deviating.
Right. Right. And then there are three types of deviated local departments that affect state usually. And usually they tend to be 80 plus employees. These are big employees. And I think I have a list of every jurisdiction that is a deviating social service. So we do a comprehensive plan every year. And we have to check off on that what we're going to do, what kind of raises and so forth. So that's the difference.
But they actually went against, they went beyond the State Department of the pay raises.
Let's just compensate people who have 1, 2, 3, and 4. years, 5 years experience. So we can try to, just like we're trying to do with local governments, is bring up people at this bottom and try to keep people so that we don't have such a change. And that may have to be tweeted a bit. We may have to look at that, you know, and look at each one and make some different determinations. Now, when we went to, because see, our budget ends in August. It's new budget starts in August. So when we said, well, let's start our budget the same time that the county started theirs in July, that knocked it up, I think, to 3,000 or 4,000. And this is a learning experience. When you look, I can't keep up with it. I mean, we have a little chart in the back of our manual. You had a manual there, Tom, that manual. The back of it, it tells you exactly which services are 100% federal, which services are local. You can't keep that stuff in your head. But anyway, we have been working. You see all the staff right here? I pulled everything. We've been working on this stuff. Because we do want to do.
Well, two things real quick. I think, I mean, the first thing, when you get to the double dipping thing, I think that the short version of that is yes, you can do that.
Yeah, we can.
And that's what it says. I mean, because the state puts it in, locality puts it in.
One thing we did,
and
I said, if you look at the money, where we got this, it's all pretty much local state. We always try to spend the state federal money, trying to the local. Right. They say it better as long as we got it. But like I said, you double dip if you want, because you got the,
it's not double dipping though.
Right.
Yeah. All it is the share of the
state.
Some states, some federal, some local. Mm-hmm. And I'm not suggesting that at all that anybody's trying to get raised from new places, which happened in our county before.
Yeah.
Yes.
So in this case, I included social services in the county pay plan because I just thought that's what I was supposed to do. I'm a new county administrator. I didn't know any better. I thought it was supposed to be. Then the county code says that the way you follow the state plan. So I said, I pulled them out of there and told Susan, we pulled them out and follow the state plan. I'm not suggesting at all that your raise plan, your tier plan, while I'm, as an administrator, I don't agree with the way you're wrapping exactly, but I don't care. That's your business. That's truly an internal thing. My question, only one, and it's easy to resolve for me, just like it's easy to resolve for everybody else. When you do raises, yes, there's a county portion, and there's a state portion, but don't pay all of it. When you do raises, does that require the concurrence or the approval of the Board of Supervisors so it becomes officially and formally part of your base? I contend that it should. I'm not saying that it has to. That's my contention.
Yeah.
That's the only issue for me.
And the other thing is...
Everyone's actually paying the 1.25%.
They are, because that's a local contribution to the rest.
And the other thing is, during the course of the year, we return money to the state. If we don't use money, we go through it a certain time, we can return money. Say, for example, in our child care program, sometimes we may have... I know, child, you had 24 kids waiting where parents want to work and we don't have it. We can ask the state for additional funding. They will also help us with some additional funding when there is a real need, which is nice.
It's one of the most complicated things I have ever seen in my whole entire life.
Yeah, it came from Richmond.
And it's fluid.
We go three budgets.
Which I guess would get to my second point, because I know that once upon a time there was some sort of proportional funding, like if the state gave X, then we kicked in the Y, something like that. And I know that kind of went by the wayside before my tenure on the board.
2008.
Okay, so...
We voted for, because we were given the county piece of government. That's my first year on the board. We were given 4%. The school was getting 4%. Gene said, but he said, well, we ought to give the county people 4% too. And they did. Mm-hmm. And then I think the state came in with 2%.
Okay. So there was an actual
initial memorandum back in 2010 or something like that, where Susan had actually outlined, like, here's what it used to be, and maybe you two gentlemen know what I'm talking about more than others, but she had actually outlined, okay, here's what the state contribution was, here's what the local contribution. It used to be like a 2-to-1 ratio state to locality, and then that went by the wayside for one reason or another. I mean, what, I mean...
76.24 for most things, 84.5, 15.5, 84.5 for some other splits.
Okay.
Changed
a little more.
Yeah, so it's educated me on all this stuff too. I mean, it is.
So there was some sort of state, locale, global funding equation that kind of went by the wayside. Yeah. I wish Susan was here because she'd be able to tell us point blank. But maybe you all can.
And that's why she's so valuable. She has been there a long time, and there's been this, evolving.
Just the nature of social.
Yeah, right. And that's why our senior members.
Stable and predictable, and you know where they are. It's a lot easier to plan. I don't get the sense that we're really doing that with social services per se. It just sort of seems like kind of shove money in the center of the table and say, this is it, take or leave it, and there's no predictable funding formula that goes along with it. Does that make sense? Susan's going to know exactly what I'm talking about. There's a letter in 2010 that she addressed to the board directly because there was some sort of cut in social services funding, and she went back to the memory vault and said, I'd really like it if we went back to this way or this approach. And it was pretty much based along the same lines. It's like, look, we're local administered, state affiliated, this is the way it used to be, that went by the wayside, we really wish we could reappropriate it this way. And it didn't get any response out of the 2010 board, but I know it's been something that Susan's mentioned kind of cautiously every single year that she'd like to see it go back to the way it was.
She said the same at our meeting some months ago when we had the state HR officer and wanted to go back to that plan. Okay, me too.
I just
sort of plan.
Yeah.
To change.
One more comment might help them understand this concern about obligating future years. When we submit a budget, and we have to prepare 15 budgets, when we submit it, you won't be able to identify the so-called $12,000 in there. It's just going to be a lump sum we feel we need to have to support people we need to hire to employ to do their job. Now, whether some of them get this much money and others get that much, some of them down here, we don't provide that detail. That's all worked out in the background.
So it's clearly that is provided. It's part of the budget package and it's part of the unit system. And so both that diesel.
Yeah, you're not worth the annual salary we tend to be employing.
Indeed, that's what's in our unit system. That's what's in our financial system.
You may ask, but that is what was based on.
But you're saying that's all approved with the state level.
I guess you have it because your finance office writes the checks.
Right.
Otherwise, you wouldn't have it, right?
Well, we saw some of them. You know, one, because of the benefits and pay and things like that. That's what the office is here.
We used to get it in the budget. We used to, but we got people's pay in the budget. We had a big budget sheet. If social services came through, they had all the important samples and things like that.
We still do.
Yeah.
In every budget primary department, that's part of the budget package.
Yeah.
We roll up, but we have the detail for every single employee. And if there's paid plans, you know, but normally then they say, oh, by the way, we're going to be applying a 2% rate, like nobody does that, that's accounting. Except social, but you can say we could be applying a 2% raise to that, so we need this many dollars.
You know, this we got this report right here, Local Department of Social Services, the profile report from 2012. I meant to, I was going to copy you all one again. I watched you call. I had called a printer at home, but I ran out of time because this summarizes exactly the local funding, how many people are on Medicaid, how many people get SNAP, and we need to inform them that, too, that the state has decided we do not refer to our social workers as social workers anymore. They are
back, but it's not too much.
But they could care less if it's 6 or 7% suspended.
It could be 35%.
Yeah, it could be 35%. So it doesn't really mean much.
So the availability of
local
funds.
Yeah.
And you already have a program.
So we've already given it.
So the bottom line is, your board is it's organized now, sets policy, raises, and you decide what to do with your budget. Now, there's the...
We don't raise pay. If the county doesn't get a raise, we don't raise our people. If there's no raise in the county,
and they decide to give 35% raises, and everybody does
not need
the other
question,
then you can have a different conversation.
No, you don't have confidence.
I think we're done. I mean, that's...
You know, the one thing I you go back and look year after year after year, we probably give the money back to the government year. I don't deny the fact we all come back and ask them.
But that's in a certain category, Tom.
What's that?
That's in a certain category, like 60-40. And we get some of it back, and then we agree to give you all a certain
amount. We're not trying to avoid it. We also get responsible for
How good was that?
Because
for
get that 3%.
Yeah, they get 3%. benefit county.
So they benefit both ways.
No.
That doesn't make any sense.
No, well, I don't want to say that other social services.
That doesn't make any sense.
We're not here. And I've been on social services for 20 years. And over the last 20 years, most of that's been in other agencies. Typically, historically, the county has always given either a raise when the state didn't, or if they did get a raise, or the state gave a raise, the county raise was always more. So if the county wanted to give a 4% raise, and the state, it's unusual that they ever get more than a 2%, we give a 2%. Social services, we would get the 4% raise that the county got, and the 2% from the state would help offset the 4%.
That's reasonable.
Yeah. Right.
As long as it's not a sales.
And that needs to be clear. I think that needs to be very clear, and that has to be what should happen. And we'll, have a conversation.
Well, I mean, honestly, I need to know that for budget purposes, because I've got to design a pay plan.
Definitely.
While you design your pay plan, I still have to know how to build it into the budget. And the constitutional officers have a separate rule. So if it is that social service employees follow the county pay plan, as far as raises, and if the state gives some money, that helps offset part of that, and that total dollar value on how it will be applied to your employees is $15,000, then you guys can apply it however you want within your 35 employees, as long as it doesn't exceed that dollar value. But that's when it's part of the budget process. If you want to do something separate, this board says it's okay to do things, okay? I don't care. I just know that it's not that that way.
If the state hadn't given the 3%, then the county would have been paying $42,000 or $50,000. It would have been
out of dollars. The current ordinances don't allow that.
What?
The current ordinances don't allow that.
Not what?
For the pay plan, the pay raises to come through the county.
No. I'm saying that before we didn't get the 3% from the state. With no 3%.
Right.
Okay? We would have been included in ALEC.
I included social services staff in the 5432 plan mistakenly.
Mistakenly,
because I wasn't aware of our county code. I knew the county code says that social services employees follow the state compensation and pay plan also. That's what our county ordinance says. If we change that, then we can get to the place where it's kind of the happy place.
Right.
Where,
but we need to.
So that's even and fair. If the state gets 4% this year,
right.
Well, that's a little bit of a conundrum, because if the state gets 4% and the county's not having any, that's a little shaky. But normally it's not that way. Could be, but normally it's not.
So we need to change that.
Yes.
That otherwise, and what you're saying to me, and I heard you say it before I heard so many things, is that if we hadn't gotten 3%, then they wouldn't have been in the budget.
Indeed, unless the Board of Supervisors allocated additional funds to the Social Services Board so they could apply it that way.
Sure.
Otherwise, it would have been on a high.
Yeah.
As I read it, on current code, there's no other way to do it.
Right.
Current local code, not state.
Local code, so that needs to change.
All of them, of course, consistent terms. How you apply it inside?
Right.
Has there been any raises that you have not gotten during the years? Have you got zero raises from either the state or local? Or have you always gotten at least maybe 1% or 2%?
You
haven't got
Right.
Like the rest of the system. Okay, that's where I was.
Neither is state.
Okay.
But there have been years in the past where both have been applied. Mm-hmm. That's not just social services, to other county departments as well that are in conundrum, whether they're part state, part local. And that's what you all said last summer, last fall, that's not the way this is supposed to work. It's supposed to be one source, not both. Now, in this case, when it's an offsetting, then that makes financial sense as long as it's not additive.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise, the rest of the time, you're going to be terrible. Otherwise, sorry.
Okay. I think we're good.
Do you all have any questions for us? Comments, concerns, rocks, papers, scissors?
No. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
I want to see a speech.
closed session now. So we were...
Well, there's all kinds of stuff here. Kelsey, investment funds.
They don't have to be done. They don't
have to
be done. I would just list all of them.
That's all of them. Yes, okay. Mr. Chairman, we've been a county board of supervisors enter into a closed meeting pursuant to the provisions of Section 2.2-371181.
Oh, we're going to close
meeting. Matter Section 2.2-371183, real estate. Section 2.2-371186, Section 2.2-371187 for legal matters, investment funds, the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended for the purpose of discussing.
There's a second?
Yeah, the first
second. Motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mr. Chester. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. That's 5-0.
Can be adjourned. We've been a county board supervisor. Convene again in open session. Second, recorded by David.
Second. Motion made by Mr. Weaver. Seconded by Mr. Chester. Ms. Albright?
Yes.
Ms. Booker?
Yes.
Mr. Weaver?
Yes.
Mr. Chester?
Yes.
Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0. Mr. Weaver?
Be a result to the best of my knowledge only public business matters lawfully exempted from open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-3711-A of the Code of Virginia, 1950 as amended. And only public business matters as were identified in the motion before the closed meeting was convened, or heard, discussed, or considered in the meeting.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0. Anything else for the good of the order?
Yes. I move to allow Joyce Engineering to proceed with an analysis and appraisal of the equipment wells, water storage tank, and land at Carysbrook facility, formerly known as Thomasville Plant, for a cost not to exceed $5,575.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Allenberg, seconded by Mr. Chester. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0. Any left?
Did you sign yet?
We have a motion to adjourn.
Is
there a second?
What?
No? Second. Second. Motion made by Mrs. Booker, seconded by Mr. Chester. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0.
I continue to the Barbecue Bands and Brews. $8 before the gate, $10 at the